she'd compelled him. He staggered across the bridge, just as Aelin whirled, drawing Goldrin and ducking just as the wingleader's sword swiped for her head. It hit stone, the pillar groaning, but Aelin was already moving. Not toward the second bridge, but back toward the first one, on the witch's side. Where the other witches, without Adian's arrows to block them, were now racing from the cover of the woods.
You,
the wingleader growled, attacking again. Aelin rolled, right through Rowan's blood, again dodging the fatal blow. She uncurled to her feet right in front of the first bridge, and two swings of Goldrin had the chains snapping. The witches skidded to a stop at the lip of the ravine, as the bridge collapsed, cutting them off. The air behind her shifted, and Aelin moved, but not fast enough. Cloth and flesh tore in her upper arm, and she barked out a cry as the witch's blade sliced her. She whirled, bringing Goldrin up for the second blow. Steel met steel, and sparked. Rowan's blood was at her feet, smeared across the temple stones. Aelin Galathinius looked at Manon Blackbeak over their crossed swords, and let out a low, vicious snarl. Queen, savior, enemy. Manon didn't give a shit. She was going to kill the woman. Their laws demanded it. Honor demanded it. Even if she hadn't slaughtered Baba Yellowlegs, Manon would have killed her just for that spell she'd used to freeze her in place. That was what she'd been doing with her feet, etching some foul spell with the man's blood. And now she was going to die. Windcleaver pressed against the queen's blade, but Aelin held her ground and hissed, "I'm going to rip you to shreds." Behind them, the 13 gathered on the ravine's edge, cut off. One whistle from Manon had half of them scrambling for the wyverns. She didn't get to sound the second whistle. Faster than a human had a right to be, the queen swept out a leg, sending Manon tripping back. Aelin didn't hesitate. She flipped the sword in her hand and lunged. Manon deflected the blow, but Aelin got past her guard and pinned her, slamming her head against stones that were damp with the Fey warrior's blood. Splotches of dark bloomed in her vision. Manon drew in breath for the second whistle, the one to call off Astarin and her arrows. She was interrupted by the queen slamming her fist into Manon's face. Black splintered further across her vision, but she twisted, twisted with every bit of her immortal strength, and they went flipping across the temple floor. The drop loomed, and then an arrow whizzed right for the queen's exposed back as she landed atop Manon. Manon twisted again, and the arrow bounced off the pillar instead. She threw Aelin from her, but the queen was instantly on her feet again, nimble as a cat. "She's mine," Manon barked across the ravine to Astarin. The queen laughed, hoarse and cold, circling as Manon got to her feet. Across the other side of the ravine, the two males were helping the wounded Fey warrior off the bridge, and the golden-haired warrior charged. "Don't you dare, Adian," Aelin said, throwing out a hand in the male's direction. He froze halfway across the bridge. Impressive, Manon admitted, to have them under her command so thoroughly. "Kaol, keep an eye on him," the queen barked. Then, holding Manon's gaze, Aelin sheathed her mighty blade across her back, the giant ruby in the pommel catching in the midday light. "Swords are boring," the queen said, and palmed two fighting knives. Manon sheathed Windcleaver along her own back. She flicked her wrists, the iron nails shooting out. She cracked her jaw, and her fangs descended.
"Indeed."
The queen looked at the nails, the teeth, and grinned. Honestly, it was a shame that Manon had to kill her. Manon Blackbeak lunged, as swift and deadly as an adder. Aelin darted back, dodging each swipe of those lethal iron nails. For her throat, for her face, for her guts, back and back circling around the pillars. It was only a matter of minutes before the wyverns arrived. Aelin jabbed with her daggers, and the witch sidestepped her, only to slash with her nails right at Aelin's neck. Aelin spun aside, but the nails grazed her skin. Blood warmed her neck and shoulders. The witch was so damn fast, and one hell of a fighter. But Rowan and the others were across the second bridge. Now she just had to get there, too. Manon Blackbeak feinted left and slashed right. Aelin ducked and rolled aside. The pillar shuddered as those iron claws gouged four deep lines into the stone. Manon hissed. Aelin made to drive her dagger into her spine. The witch lashed out with a hand and wrapped it clean around the blade. Blue blood welled, but the witch bore down on the blade until it snapped into three pieces in her hand.
Gods above.
Aelin had the sense to go in low with her other dagger, but the witch was already there, and Adian's shout rang in her ears as Manon's knee drove up into her gut. The air knocked from her in a whoosh, but Aelin kept her grip on the dagger, even as the witch threw her into another pillar. The stone column rocked against the blow, and Aelin's head cracked, agony arcing through her, but a slash, directly for her face. Aelin ducked. Again, the stone shuddered beneath the impact. Aelin squeezed air into her body. Move! She had to keep moving, smooth as a stream, smooth as the wind of her Carinom, bleeding and hurt across the way. Pillar to pillar, she retreated, rolling and ducking and dodging. Manon swiped and slashed, slamming into every column, a force of nature in her own right. And then back around, again and again, pillar after pillar absorbing the blows that should have shredded her face, her neck. Aelin slowed her steps, let Manon think she was tiring, growing clumsy. Enough, coward, Manon hissed, making to tackle Aelin to the ground. But Aelin swung around a pillar and onto the thin lip of bare rock beyond the temple platform, the drop looming, just as Manon collided with the column. The pillar groaned, swayed, and toppled to the side, hitting the pillar beside it, sending them both cracking to the ground, along with the domed roof. Manon didn't even have time to lunge out of the way as the marble crashed down on her. One of the few remaining witches on the other side of the ravine screamed. Aelin was already running, even as the rock island itself began trembling, as if whatever ancient force held this temple together had died the moment the roof crumbled. Shit. Aelin sprinted for the second bridge, dust and debris burning her eyes and lungs. The island jolted with a thunderous crack, so violent that Aelin stumbled. But there were the posts and the bridge beyond, Adian waiting on the other side, an arm held out, beckoning. The island swayed again, wider and longer this time. It was going to collapse beneath them. There was a flicker of blue and white, a flash of red cloth, a glimmer of iron, a hand and a shoulder grappling with a fallen column. Slowly, painfully, Manon heaved herself onto a slab of marble, her face coated in pale dust, blue blood leaking down her temple. Across the ravine, cut off entirely, the golden-haired witch was on her knees.
Manon!
I don't think you've ever groveled for anything in your life, wing leader, the king had said. But there was a Blackbeak witch on her knees, begging whatever gods they worshipped. And there was Manon Blackbeak, struggling to rise as the temple island crumbled away. Aelin took a step onto the bridge.
Asterin, that was the golden-haired witch's name. She screamed for Manon again, a plea to rise, to survive. The island jolted. The remaining bridge, the bridge to her friends, to Rowan, to safety, still held. Aelin had felt it before, a thread in the world, a current running between her and someone else. She'd felt it one night years ago, and had given a young healer the money to get the hell out of this continent. She'd felt the tug, and had decided to tug back. Here it was again, that tug, toward Manon, whose arms buckled as she collapsed to the stone. Her enemy, her new enemy, who would have killed her and Rowan if given the chance, a monster incarnate. but perhaps the monsters needed to look out for each other every now and then.
Run!
Adian roared from across the ravine. So she did. Aelin ran for Manon, leaping over the fallen stones, her ankle wrenching on loose debris. The island rocked with her every step, and the sunlight was scalding, as if Mala were holding that island aloft with every last bit of strength the goddess could summon in this land. Then Aelin was upon Manon Blackbeak, and the witch lifted hate-filled eyes to her. Aelin hauled off stone after stone from her body, the island beneath them buckling.
You're too good a fighter to kill, Aelin breathed, hooking an arm under Manon's shoulders and hauling her up.
The rock swayed to the left, but held.
Oh, gods. If I die because of you, I'll beat the shit out of you in hell.
She could have sworn the witch let out a broken laugh as she got to her feet, nearly a dead weight in Aelin's arms.
You should let me die,
Manon rasped as they limped over the rubble.
I know,
Aelin panted, her sliced arm aching with the weight of the witch it supported. They hurried over the second bridge, the temple rock swaying to the right, stretching the bridge behind them tightly over the drop, and the shining river far, far below. Aelin tugged at the witch, gritting her teeth, and Manon stumbled into a staggering run. Adian remained between the posts across the ravine, an arm still extended toward her, while his other lifted his sword high, ready for the wing leader's arrival. The rock behind them groaned.
Halfway, nothing but a death plunge waiting for them.
Manon coughed blue blood onto the wooden slats. Aelin snapped,
What the hell good are your beasts if they can't save you from this kind of thing?
The island veered back in the other direction, and the bridge went taut.
Oh, shit. Shit, it was going to snap.
Faster they ran, until she could see Adian's straining fingers on the whites of his eyes. The rock cracked, so loudly it deafened her. Then came the tug and stretch of the bridge as the island began to crumble into dust, sliding to the side. Aelin lunged the last few steps, gripping Manon's red cloak as the chains of the bridge snapped. The wooden slats dropped out from beneath them, but they were already leaping. Aelin let out a grunt as she slammed into Adian. She whirled to see Kaol grabbing Manon and hauling her over the lip of the ravine, her cloak torn and covered in dust, fluttering in the wind. When Aelin looked past the witch, the temple was gone. Manon gasped for air, concentrating on her breathing, on the cloudless sky above her. The humans left her lying between the stone bridge posts. The queen hadn't even bothered to say goodbye. She just dashed for the injured Fey warrior, his name like a prayer on her lips.
Rowan.
Manon had looked up in time to see the queen fall to her knees before the injured warrior in the grass, demanding answers from the brown-haired man, Kaol, who pressed a hand to the arrow wound in Rowan's shoulder to staunch the bleeding. The queen's shoulders were shaking.
Fireheart,
the Fey warrior murmured. Manon would have watched. Would have. Had she not coughed blood onto the bright grass and blacked out. When she awoke, they were gone. Only minutes had passed, because then there were booming wings and Abraxos's roar. And there were Asterin and Sorrel, rushing for her before their wyverns had fully landed. The Queen of Terrasen had saved her life. Manon didn't know what to make of it, for she now owed her enemy a life debt. And she had just learned how thoroughly her grandmother and the King of Otterlin intended to destroy them. Chapter 61. The trek back through Oakwald was the longest journey of Aelin's miserable life. Nezrin had removed the arrow from Rowan's shoulder, and Adian had found some herbs to chew and shove into the open wound to staunch the bleeding. But Rowan still sagged against Kaol and Adian as they hurried through the forest. Nowhere to go. She had nowhere to take an injured Fey male in the capital city, in this entire shithole kingdom. Lysandra was pale and shaking, but she'd squared her shoulders and offered to help carry Rowan when one of them tired. None of them accepted. When Kaol at last asked Nezrin to take over, Aelin glimpsed the blood soaking his tunic and hands,
Rowan's blood, and nearly vomited. Slower. Every step was slower as Rowan's strength flagged.
He needs to rest,
Lysandra said gently. Aelin paused, the towering oaks pressing in around her. Rowan's eyes were half closed, his face drained of all color. He couldn't even lift his head. She should have let the witch die.
We can't just camp out in the middle of the woods, Aelin said. He needs a healer.
I know where we can take him,
Kaol said. She dragged her eyes to the captain. She should have let the witch kill him, too. Kaol wisely averted his gaze and faced Nezrin.
Your father's country house. The man who runs it is married to a midwife.
Nezrin's mouth tightened.
She's not a healer, but yes, she might have something.
Do you understand, Aelin said very quietly to them, that if I suspect they're going to betray us, they will die? It was true, and maybe it made her a monster to Kaol, but she didn't care.
I know,
Kaol said. Nezrin merely nodded, still calm, still solid.
Then lead the way, Aelin said, her voice hollow, and pray they can keep their mouths shut.
Joyous, frenzied barking greeted them, rousing Rowan from the half-consciousness he'd fallen into during the last few miles to the little stone farmhouse. Aelin had barely breathed the entire time. But despite herself, despite Rowan's injuries, as Fleetfoot raced across the high grass toward them, Aelin smiled a little. The dog leaped upon her, licking and whining and wagging her feathery golden tail. She hadn't realized how filthy and bloody her hands were until she put them on Fleetfoot's shining coat. Adian grunted as he took all of Rowan's weight while Kaol and Nezrin jogged for the large, brightly lit stone house, dusk having fallen fully around them.
Good.
Fewer eyes to see as they exited Oakwald and crossed the freshly tilled fields. Lysandra tried to help Adian, but he refused her again. She hissed at him and helped anyway. Fleetfoot danced around Aelin, then noticed Adian, Lysandra, and Rowan, and that tail became a bit more tentative.
Friends,
she told her dog. She'd become huge since Aelin had last seen her. She wasn't sure why it surprised her, when everything else in her life had changed as well. Aelin's assurance seemed good enough for Fleetfoot, who trotted ahead, escorting them to the wooden door that had opened to reveal a tall midwife with a no-nonsense face, that took one look at Rowan and tightened. One word. One damn word that suggested she might turn them in, and she was dead. But the woman said,
Whoever put that blood moss on the wound saved his life. Get him inside. We need to clean it before anything else can be done.
It took a few hours for Marta, the housekeeper's wife, to clean, disinfect, and patch up Rowan's wounds.
Lucky, she kept saying. So lucky it didn't hit anything vital.
Kaol didn't know what to do with himself, other than carry away the bowls of bloodied water. Aelin just sat on a stool beside the cot in the spare room of the elegant, comfortable house, and monitored every move Marta made. Kaol wondered if Aelin knew that she was a bloodied mess, that she looked even worse than Rowan. Her neck was brutalized. Blood had dried on her face. Her cheek was bruised, and the left sleeve of her tunic was torn open to reveal a vicious slice. And then there were the dust, dirt, and blue blood of the wing leader coating her. But Aelin perched on the stool, never moving, only drinking water, snarling if Marta so much as looked at Rowan funny. Marta, somehow, endured it. And when the midwife was done, she faced the queen. With no clue at all who sat in her house, Marta said,
You have two choices. You can either go wash up in the spigot outside, or you can sit with the pigs all night. You're dirty enough that one touch could infect his wounds.
Aelin glanced over her shoulder at Adian, who was leaning against the wall behind her. He nodded silently. He'd look after him. Aelin rose and stalked out.
I'll inspect your other friend now, Marta said,
and hurried to where Lysandra had fallen asleep in the adjoining room, curled up on a narrow bed cot. Upstairs, Nezrin was busy dealing with the staff, ensuring their silence. But he'd seen the tentative joy on their faces when they'd arrived. Nezrin and the Falik family had earned their loyalty long ago. Kaol gave Aelin 2 minutes, and then followed her outside. The stars were bright overhead, the full moon nearly blinding. The night wind whispered through the grass, barely audible over the clunk and sputter of the spigot. He found the queen crouched before it, her face in the stream of water.
"I'm sorry," he said.
She rubbed at her face and heaved the lever until more water poured over her. Kaol went on.
"I just wanted to end it for him. You were right. All this time you were right. But I wanted to do it myself. I didn't know it would... I'm sorry."
She released the lever and pivoted to look up at him.
"I saved my enemy's life today," she said flatly.
She uncoiled to her feet, wiping the water from her face. And though he stood taller than her, he felt smaller as Aelin stared at him.
No, not just Aelin.
Queen Aelin Ashriver Galathinius, he realized, was staring at him.
"They tried to shoot my
Rowan through the heart, and I saved her anyway." "I know,"
he said, her scream when that arrow had gone through Rowan.
"I'm sorry,"
he said again. She gazed up at the stars, toward the north. Her face was so cold.
"Would you have truly killed him if you'd had the chance?"
"Yes," Kaol breathed. "I was ready for that."
She slowly turned to him.
"We'll do it.
Together.
We'll free magic.
Then you and I will go in there and end it together. You're not going to insist I stay back?"
"How can I deny you that last gift to him?"
"Aelin."
Her shoulders sagged slightly.
"I don't blame you. If it had been Rowan with that collar around his neck, I would have done the same thing."
The words hit him in the gut as she walked away. A monster, he'd called her weeks ago. He had believed it, and allowed it to be a shield against the bitter tang of disappointment and sorrow. He was a fool. They moved Rowan before dawn. By whatever immortal grace lingering in his veins, he'd healed enough to walk on his own, and so they slipped out of the lovely country house before any of the staff awoke. Aelin said goodbye only to Fleetfoot, who had slept curled by her side during the long night that she'd watched over Rowan. Then they were off, Aelin and Adian flanking Rowan, his arms slung over their shoulders as they hurried across the foothills. The early morning mist cloaked them as they made their way into Rifthold one last time. Chapter 62. Manon didn't bother looking pleasant as she sent Abraxo slamming into the ground in front of the king's party. The horses whinnied and bucked while the 13 circled above the clearing in which they'd spotted the party.
"Wing leader,"
the king said from astride his war horse, not at all perturbed. Beside him, his son Dorian cringed. Cringed the way that blonde thing in Morath had when it attacked them.
"Was there something you wanted?"
the king asked coolly.
"Or a reason you look halfway to Hellas's realm?"
Manon dismounted Abraxos and walked toward the king and his son. The prince focused on his saddle, careful not to meet her eyes.
"There are rebels in your woods," she said. "They took your little prisoner out of the wagon and then tried to attack me and my 13. I slaughtered them all. I hope you don't mind. They left 3 of your men dead in the wagon, though it seems their loss wasn't noticed."
The king merely said,
"You came all this way to tell me that?"
"I came all this way to tell you that when I face your rebels, your enemies, I shall have no interest in prisoners, and the 13 are not a caravan to transport them as you will." She stepped closer to the prince's horse.
"Dorian,"
she said, a command and a challenge. Sapphire eyes snapped to hers, no trace of otherworldly darkness. Just a man trapped inside. She faced the king.
"You should send your son to Morath. It'd be his sort of place.
Before the king could reply, Manon walked back to Abraxos. She'd planned on telling the king about Aelin, about the rebels who called themselves Adian and Rowan and Kaol. But they were human and could not travel swiftly, not if they were injured. She owed her enemy a life debt. Manon climbed into Abraxos's saddle. "My grandmother might be High Witch," she said to the king, "but I ride at the head of the armies." The king chuckled. "Ruthless. I think I rather like you, Wing Leader."
"That weapon my grandmother made? The mirrors? You truly plan to use shadow fire with it?"
The king's ruddy face tightened with warning. The replica inside the wagon had been a fraction of the size of what was depicted in the plans nailed to the wall. Giant transportable battle towers, 100 feet high, their insides lined with the sacred mirrors of the ancients. Mirrors that were once used to build and break and mend. Now they would be amplifiers, reflecting and multiplying any power the king chose to unleash, until it became a weapon that could be aimed at any target. If the power were Kaltain's shadow fire.
"You ask too many questions, Wing Leader,"
the king said.
"I don't like surprises," was her only reply. Except this. This had been a surprise.
The weapon wasn't for winning glory or triumph or for the love of battle. It was for extermination. A full-scale slaughter that would involve little fighting at all. Any opposing army, even Aelin and her warriors, would be defenseless.
The king's face was turning purple with impatience.
But Manon was already taking to the skies, Abraxos beating his wings hard. She watched the prince until he was a speck of black hair, and wondered what it was like to be trapped within that body. Elide Lochan waited for the supply wagon. It didn't come. A day late, 2 days late. She hardly slept for fear it would arrive when she was dozing. When she awoke on the third day, her mouth dry, it was already habit to hurry down to help in the kitchen. She worked until her leg nearly gave out. Then, just before sunset, the whinny of horses and the clatter of wheels and the shouts of men bounced off the dark stones of the Long Keep Bridge. Elide slipped from the kitchen before they could notice her, before the cook could conscript her into performing some new task. She hurried up the steps as best she could with her chain, her heart in her throat. She should have kept her things downstairs, should have found some hiding spot. Up and up into Manon's tower. She'd refilled the water skein each morning and had amassed a little supply of food in a pouch. Elide threw open the door to Manon's room, searching for the pallet where she kept her supplies. But Vernon was inside. He sat on the edge of Manon's bed as if it were his own.
"Going somewhere, Elide?"
Chapter 63.
"Where on earth could you be headed?"
Vernon said as he stood, smug as a cat. Panic bleeded in her veins. The wagon. The wagon.
"Was that the plan all along? To hide among those witches and then run?"
Elide backed toward the door. Vernon clicked his tongue.
"We both know there's no point in running, and the Wing Leader isn't going to be here anytime soon."
Elide's knees wobbled. Oh, gods.
"But is my beautiful, clever niece human, or which kind? Such an important question."
He grabbed her by the elbow, a small knife in his hand. She could do nothing against the stinging slice in her arm, the red blood that welled.
"Not a witch at all, it seems."
"I am a Blackbeak," Elide breathed. She would not bow to him, would not cower. Vernon circled her.
"Too bad they're all up north and can't verify it."
"Fight, fight, fight," her blood sang. "Do not let him cage you. Your mother went down fighting. She was a witch, and you are a witch, and you do not yield. You do not yield." Vernon lunged, faster than she could avoid in her chains, one hand gripping her under the arm while the other slammed her head into the wood so hard that her body just
stopped. That was all he needed. That stupid pause, to pin her other arm, gripping both in his hand while the other now clenched on her neck hard enough to hurt. To make her realize that her uncle had once trained as her father had.
You're coming with me.
No. The word was a whisper of breath. His grip tightened, twisting her arms until they barked in pain.
Don't you know what a prize you are? What you might be able to do?
He yanked her back, opening the door.
No.
No, she wouldn't let him take her. Wouldn't. But screaming would do her no good. Not in a keep full of monsters. Not in a world where no one remembered she existed, or bothered to care. She stilled, and he took that as acquiescence. She could feel his smile at the back of her head as he nudged her into the stairwell.
Blackbeak blood is in your veins, along with our family's generous line of magic.
He hauled her down the stairs, and bile burned her throat. There was no one coming for her, because she had belonged to no one.
The witches don't have magic, not like us, but you, a hybrid of both lines.
Vernon gripped her arm harder, right over the cut he'd made, and she cried out. The sound echoed, hollow and small, down the stone stairwell.
You do your house a great honor, Elide.
Vernon left her in a freezing dungeon cell. No light. No sound, save for the dripping of water somewhere. Shaking, Elide didn't even have the words to beg, as Vernon tossed her inside.
You brought this upon yourself, you know,
he said,
when you allied with that witch, and confirmed my suspicions that their blood flows through your veins.
He studied her, but she was gobbling down the details of the cell. Anything, anything to get her out. She found nothing.
I'll leave you here until you're ready.
I doubt anyone will notice your absence anyway.
He slammed the door, and darkness swallowed her entirely. She didn't bother trying the handle. Manon was summoned by the Duke the moment she set foot in Morath. The messenger was cowering in the archway to the Aerie, and could barely get the words out as he took in the blood and dirt and dust that still covered Manon. She'd contemplated snapping her teeth at him just for trembling like a spineless fool, but she was drained. Her head was pounding, and anything more than basic movement required far too much thought. None of the 13 had dared say anything about her grandmother, that she had approved of the breeding. Sorrel and Vesta trailing mere steps behind her, Manon flung open the doors to the Duke's council chamber, letting the slamming wood say enough about what she thought of being summoned immediately. The Duke, only Caltaine beside him, flicked his eyes over her.
Explain your appearance.
Manon opened her mouth. If Vernon heard that Aelin Galathinius was alive, if he suspected for one heartbeat the debt that Aelin might feel toward Elide's mother for saving her life, he might very well decide to end his niece's life. Rebels attacked us. I killed them all. The Duke chucked a file of papers onto the table. They hit the glass and slid, spreading out in a fan.
For months now, you've wanted explanations. Well, here they are. Status reports on our enemies, larger targets for us to strike. His Majesty sends his best wishes.
Manon approached. Did he also send that demon prince into my barracks to attack us? She stared at the Duke's thick neck, wondering how easily the rough skin would tear. Parrington's mouth twisted to the side.
Roland had outlived his usefulness. Who better to take care of him than your 13?
I hadn't realized we were to be your executioners. She should indeed rip out his throat for what he'd tried to do. Beside him, Caltaine was wholly blank. A shell. But that shadow fire. Would she summon it if the Duke were attacked?
Sit and read the files, Wingleader.
She didn't appreciate the command and let out a snarl to tell him so, but she sat
and read.
Reports on Eelway, on Melisande, on Fenharrow, on the Red Desert and Wendlin, and on Terrasen. According to the report, Aelin Galathinius, long believed to be dead, had appeared in Wendlin and bested four of the Volg princes, including a lethal general in the king's army, using fire.
Aelin had fire magic, Elide had said. She could have survived the cold.
But that meant that magic still worked in Wendlin, and not here. Manon would bet a great deal of the gold hoarded at Blackbeak Keep that the man in front of her, and the king in Rifthold was the reason why. Then a report of Prince Adian Ashriver, former general of Otterlin, kin to the Ashrivers of Wendlin, being arrested for treason, for associating with rebels. He had been rescued from his execution mere weeks ago by unknown forces. Possible suspects, Lord Wren Alsbrook of Terrison, and Lord Kaol Westfall of Otterlin, who had loyally served the king and his captain of the guard, until he joined forces with Adian this past spring and fled the castle the day of Adian's capture. They suspected the captain hadn't gone far, and that he would try to free his lifelong friend, the crown prince.
Free him.
The prince had taunted her, provoked her, as if trying to get her to kill him, and Roland had begged for death. If Kaol and Adian were both now with Aelin Galathinius, all working together. They hadn't been in the forest to spy, but to save the prince, and whoever that female prisoner had been, they'd rescued one friend at least. The Duke and the King didn't know. They didn't know how close they'd been to all their targets, or how close their enemies had come to seizing their prince. That was why the captain had come running. He had come to kill the prince, the only mercy he believed he could offer him. The rebels didn't know that the man was still inside.
Well, the Duke demanded. Any questions?
You have yet to explain the necessity of the weapon my grandmother is building. A tool like that could be catastrophic. If there's no magic, then surely obliterating the Queen of Terrison can't be worth the risk of using those towers.
Better to be over-prepared than surprised. We have full control of the towers.
Manon tapped an iron nail on the glass table.
This is a base of information, Wingleader. Continue to prove yourself and you will receive more.
Prove herself? She hadn't done anything lately to prove herself, except shred one of his demon princes and butcher that mountain tribe for no good reason. A shiver of rage went through her. Unleashing the prince in the barracks hadn't been a message then, but a test. To see if she could hold up against his worst and still obey.
Have you picked a coven for me?
Manon forced herself to give a dismissive shrug. I was waiting to see who behaved themselves the best while I was away. It'll be their reward.
You have until tomorrow.
Manon stared him down. The moment I leave this room, I'm going to bathe and sleep for a day. If you or your little demon cronies bother me before then, you'll learn just how much I enjoy playing executioner. The day after that, I'll make my decision.
You wouldn't be avoiding it, would you, Wingleader?
Why should I bother handing out favors to covens that don't deserve them? Manon didn't give herself one heartbeat to contemplate what the matron was letting these men do. As she gathered up the files, shoved them into Sorrel's arms, and strode out. She had just reached the stairs to her tower when she spotted Astarin leaning against the archway, picking at her iron nails. Sorrel and Vesta sucked in their breath.
What is it? Manon demanded, flicking out her own nails.
Astarin's face was a mask of immortal boredom.
We need to talk.
She and Astarin flew into the mountains, and she let her cousin lead. Let Abraxos follow Astarin's sky-blue female until they were far from Morath. They alighted on a little plateau covered in purple and orange wildflowers, its grasses hissing in the wind. Abraxos was practically grunting with joy. And Manon, her exhaustion as heavy as the red cloak she wore, didn't bother to reprimand him. They left their wyverns in the field. The mountain wind was surprisingly warm. The day clear and the sky full of fat, puffy clouds. She'd ordered Sorrel and Vesta to remain behind, despite their protests. If things had gotten to the point where Astarin could not be trusted to be alone with her,
Manon did not want to consider it. Perhaps that was why she had agreed to come. Perhaps it was because of the scream Asterin had issued from the other side of the ravine. It had been so like the scream of the blueblood heir, Petra, when her wyvern had been ripped to shreds. Like the scream of Petra's mother when Petra and her wyvern Keely had tumbled into thin air. Asterin walked to the edge of the plateau, the wildflowers swaying about her calves, her riding leathers shining in the bright sun. She unbraided her hair, shaking out the golden waves, then unbuckled her sword and daggers and let them thud to the ground.
I need you to listen, and not talk, she said as Manon came to stand beside her.
A high demand to make of her heir, but there was no challenge, no threat in it, and Asterin had never spoken to her like that, so Manon nodded. Asterin stared out across the mountains, so vibrant here, now that they were far from the darkness of Morath. A balmy breeze flitted between them, ruffling Asterin's curls until they looked like sunshine given form.
When I was 28, I was off hunting crokins in a valley just west of the Fangs. I had 100 miles to go before the next village, and when a storm rolled in, I didn't feel like landing. So I tried to outrace the storm on my broom, tried to fly over it. But the storm went on, up and up. I didn't know if it was the lightning or the wind, but suddenly I was falling. I managed to get control of my broom long enough to land, but the impact was brutal. Before I blacked out, I knew my arm was broken in 2 different places, my ankle twisted beyond use, and my broom shattered.
This had been over 80 years ago, and Manon had never heard of it. She'd been off on her own mission. Where, she couldn't remember now. All those years she'd spent hunting crokins had blurred together.
When I awoke, I was in a human cabin, my broom in pieces beside the bed. The man who had found me said he'd been riding home through the storm and saw me fall from the sky. He was a young hunter, mostly of exotic game, which was why he had a cabin out deep in the wild. I think I would have killed him if I'd had any strength, if only because I wanted his resources. But I faded in and out of consciousness for a few days while my bones knitted together. And when I woke again, he fed me enough that he stopped looking like food, or a threat. A long silence. I stayed there for 5 months. I didn't hunt a single crokin. I helped him stalk game, found ironwood and began carving a new broom, and we both knew what I was, what he was, that I was long-lived and he was human. But we were the same age at that moment, and we didn't care. So I stayed with him until my orders bade me report back to Blackbeak Keep, and I told him. I said I'd come back when I could.
Manon could hardly think, hardly breathe over the silence in her head. She'd never heard of this. Not a whisper. For Asterin to have ignored her sacred duties. For her to have taken up with this human man.
I was a month pregnant when I arrived back at Blackbeak Keep.
Manon's knees wobbled.
You were already gone, off on your next mission. I told no one. Not until I knew that the pregnancy would actually survive those first few months.
Not unexpected, as most witches lost their offspring during that time. For the witchling to grow past that threshold was a miracle in itself.
But I made it to 3 months, then 4. And when I couldn't hide it anymore, I told your grandmother. She was pleased and ordered me on bed rest in the keep, so nothing disturbed me or the witchling in my womb. I told her I wanted to go back out, but she refused. I knew better than to tell her I wanted to return to that cabin in the forest. I knew she'd kill him, so I remained in the tower for months, a pampered prisoner. You even visited twice, and she didn't tell you I was there. Not until the witchling was born, she said.
A long, uneven breath. It wasn't uncommon for witches to be overprotective of those carrying witchlings. An Asterin, bearing the matron's bloodline, would have been a valued commodity.
I made a plan. The moment I recovered from the birth, the moment they looked away. I'd take the witchling to her father and present her to him. I thought maybe a life in the forest, quiet and peaceful, would be better for my witchling than the bloodshed we had. I thought maybe it would be better for me.
Asterin's voice broke on the last two words. Manon couldn't bring herself to look at her cousin.
I gave birth. The witchling almost ripped me in two coming out. I thought it was because she was a fighter, because she was a true Blackbeak. And I was proud. Even as I was screaming, even as I was bleeding, I was so proud of her.
Asterin fell silent, and Manon looked at her at last. Tears were rolling down her cousin's face, gleaming in the sunshine. Asterin closed her eyes and whispered into the wind.
She was stillborn. I waited to hear that cry of triumph, but there was only silence.
Silence. And then your grandmother... She opened her eyes.
Your grandmother struck me. She beat me, again and again. All I wanted was to see my witchling, and she ordered them to have her burned instead. She refused to let me see her. I was a disgrace to every witch who had come before me. I was to blame for a defective witchling. I had dishonored the Blackbeaks. I had disappointed her. She screamed it at me again and again, and when I sobbed, she...
Manon didn't know where to stare, what to do with her arms. A stillborn was a witch's greatest sorrow and shame, but for her grandmother... Asterin unbuttoned her jacket and shrugged it off into the flowers. She removed her shirt, and the one beneath, until her golden skin glowed in the sunlight, her breasts full and heavy. Asterin turned, and Manon fell to her knees in the grass. There, branded on Asterin's abdomen in vicious, crude letters, was one word. Unclean.
She branded me. Had them heat up the iron in the same flame where my witchling burned, and stamped each letter herself. She said I had no business ever trying to conceive a Blackbeak again, that most men would take one look at the word and run.
80 years. For 80 years she had hidden this. But Manon had seen her naked, had...
No, she hadn't.
Not for decades and decades. When they were witchlings, yes, but...
In my shame, I told no one. Sorrel and Vesta. Sorrel knew because she was in that room. Sorrel fought for me, begged your grandmother.
Your grandmother snapped her arm and sent her out. But after the matron chucked me into the snow and told me to crawl somewhere and die, Sorrel found me. She got Vesta. And they brought me to Vesta's Eyrie deep in the mountains. And they secretly took care of me for the months that I couldn't get out of bed. Then one day, I just woke up and decided to fight. I trained. I healed my body. I grew strong, stronger than I'd been before, and I stopped thinking about it. A month later, I went hunting for Crokins and walked back into the keep with 3 of their hearts in a box. If your grandmother was surprised I hadn't died, she didn't show it. You were there that night I came back. You toasted in my honor and said you were proud to have such a fine second.
Still on her knees, the damp earth soaking into her pants, Manon stared at that hideous brand. I never went back to the hunter. I didn't know how to explain the brand, how to explain your grandmother, or apologize. I was afraid he'd treat me as your grandmother had, so I never went back. Her mouth wobbled. I'd fly overhead every few years, just to see.
She wiped at her face.
He never married, and even when he was an old man, I'd sometimes see him sitting on that front porch, as if he were waiting for someone.
Something was cracking and aching in Manon's chest, caving in on itself. Asterin sat among the flowers and began pulling on her clothes. She was weeping silently, but Manon didn't know if she should reach out. She didn't know how to comfort, how to soothe.
I stopped caring, Asterin said at last, about anything and everything. After that, it was all a joke and a thrill, and nothing scared me.
That wildness, that untamed fierceness, they weren't born of a free heart. but of one that had known despair so complete that living brightly, living violently, was the only way to outrun it. But I told myself, Asterin finished buttoning her jacket, I would dedicate my life wholly to being your second, to serving you, not your grandmother. Because I knew your grandmother had hidden me from you for a reason. I think she knew you would have fought for me, and whatever your grandmother saw in you that made her afraid, it was worth waiting for, worth serving. So I have. That day Abraxos had made the crossing, when her 13 had looked ready to fight their way out should her grandmother give the order to kill her. Asterin met her stare. Sorrel, Vesta, and I have known for a very long time what your grandmother is capable of. We never said anything, because we feared that if you knew it could jeopardize you. The day you saved Petra instead of letting her fall, you weren't the only one who understood why your grandmother made you slaughter that Kraken. Asterin shook her head. I am begging you, Manon. Do not let your grandmother and these men take our witches and use them like this. Do not let them turn our witchlings into monsters. What they've already done, I am begging you to help me undo it. Manon swallowed hard, her throat achingly tight. If we defy them, they will come after us, and they will kill us. I know. We all know. That's what we wanted to tell you the other night. Manon looked at her cousin's shirt, as if she could see through to the brand beneath. That is why you've been behaving this way. I am not foolish enough to pretend that I don't have a weak spot where witchlings are concerned. This was why her grandmother had pushed for decades to have Asterin demoted. I don't think it's a weak spot, Manon admitted, and glanced over her shoulder to where Abraxos was sniffing at the wildflowers. You're to be reinstated a second. Asterin bowed her head. I am sorry, Manon. You have nothing to be sorry for, she dared add. Are there others whom my grandmother treated this way? Not in the 13, but in other covens. Most let themselves die when your grandmother cast them out. And Manon had never been told. She had been lied to. Manon gazed westward across the mountains. Hope, Elid had said. Hope for a better future, for a home. Not obedience, brutality, discipline, but hope. We need to proceed carefully. Asterin blinked, the gold flecks in her black eyes glittering. What are you planning? Something very stupid, I think. Chapter 64. Rowan barely remembered anything of the agonizing trip back to Rifthold. By the time they had snuck across the city walls and through the alleys to reach the warehouse, he was so exhausted that he'd hardly hit the mattress before unconsciousness dragged him under. He awoke that night, or was it the next, with Aelin and Adian sitting on the side of the bed, talking.
Solstice is in 6 days. We need to have everything lined up by then, she was saying to her cousin.
So you're going to ask Ress and Brullo to just leave a back door open so you can sneak in?
Don't be so simple-minded. I'm going to walk in through the front door.
Of course she was. Rowan let out a groan, his tongue dry and heavy in his mouth. She whirled to him, half lunging across the bed.
How are you feeling?
She brushed a hand over his forehead, testing for fever.
You seem all right.
Fine,
he grunted. His arm and shoulder ached, but he'd endured worse. The blood loss had been what knocked his feet out from under him. More blood than he'd ever lost at once, at least so quickly, thanks to his magic being stifled. He ran an eye over Aelin. Her face was drawn and pale. A bruise kissed her cheekbone, and 4 scratches marred her neck. He was going to slaughter that witch. He said as much, and Aelin smiled.
If you're in the mood for violence, then I suppose you're just fine.
But the words were thick, and her eyes gleamed. He reached out with his good arm to grip one of her hands and squeezed tightly.
Please don't ever do that again, she breathed.
Next time, I'll ask them not to fire arrows at you, or me.
Her mouth tightened and wobbled, and she rested her brow on his good arm. He lifted the other arm, sending burning pain shooting through him as he stroked her hair. It was still matted in a few spots with blood and dirt. She must not have even bothered with a full bath. Adian cleared his throat.
We've been thinking up a plan for freeing magic and taking out the king and Dorian.
Just tell me tomorrow,
Rowan said, a headache already blooming. The mere thought of explaining to them again that every time he'd seen hellfire used, it had been more destructive than anyone could anticipate, made him want to go back to sleep.
Gods, without his magic.
Humans were remarkable. To be able to survive without leaning on magic, he had to give them credit. Adian yawned, the lousiest attempt at one Rowan had ever seen, and excused himself.
Adian,
Rowan said, and the general paused in the doorway.
Thank you.
Anytime, brother.
He walked out. Aelin was looking between them, her lips pursed again.
What?
He said. She shook her head.
You're too nice when you're wounded. It's unsettling.
Seeing the tears shine in her eyes just now had nearly unsettled him. If magic had already been freed, those witches would have been ashes the moment that arrow hit him.
Go take a bath,
he growled.
I'm not sleeping next to you while you're covered in that witch's blood.
She examined her nails, still slightly lined with dirt and blue blood.
Ugh, I've washed them 10 times already.
She rose from her seat on the side of the bed.
Why?
He asked.
Why did you save her?
She dragged a hand through her hair. A white bandage around her upper arm peeked through her shirt with the movement. He hadn't even been conscious for that wound. He stifled the urge to demand to see it, assess the injury himself, and tug her close against him.
Because that golden-haired witch, Asterin, Aelin said. She screamed Manon's name the way I screamed yours.
Rowan stilled. His queen gazed at the floor, as if recalling the moment.
How can I take away somebody who means the world to someone else, even if she's my enemy?
A little shrug.
I thought you were dying. It seemed like bad luck to let her die out of spite.
And, she snorted, falling into a ravine seemed like a pretty shitty way to die for someone who fights that spectacularly. Rowan smiled, drinking in the sight of her, the pale, grave face, the dirty clothes, the injuries. Yet her shoulders were back, chin high.
You make me proud to serve you.
A jaunty slant to her lips, but silver lined her eyes.
I know. You look like shit,
Lysandra said to Aelin. Then she remembered Evangeline, who stared at her wide-eyed and winced.
Sorry.
Evangeline refolded her napkin in her lap, every inch the dainty little queen.
You said I'm not to use such language, and yet you do.
I can curse, Lysandra said as Aelin suppressed a smile.
Because I'm older, and I know when it's most effective. And right now, our friend looks like absolute shit.
Evangeline lifted her eyes to Aelin, her red-gold hair bright in the morning sun through the kitchen window.
You look even worse in the morning, Lysandra.
Aelin choked out a laugh. Careful, Lysandra. You've got a hellion on your hands. Lysandra gave her young ward a long look.
If you've finished eating the tarts, clean off our plates, Evangeline. Go on to the roof and raise hell for Adian and Rowan.
Take care with Rowan, Aelin added. He's still on the mend, but pretend that he isn't. Men get pissy if you fuss. A wicked gleam in her eye. Evangeline bounded for the front door. Aelin listened to make sure the girl did indeed go upstairs, and then turned to her friend. She's going to be a handful when she's older. Lysandra groaned.
You think I don't know that? 11 years old and she's already a tyrant. It's an endless stream of why, and I would prefer not to, and why, and no, I should not like to listen to your good advice, Lysandra.
She rubbed her temples.
A tyrant, but a brave one, Aelin said. I don't think there are many 11-year-olds who would do what she did to save you.
The swelling had gone down,
but bruises still marred Lysandra's face, and the small scabbed cut near her lip remained an angry red. And I don't think there are many 19-year-olds who would fight tooth and nail to save a child. Lysandra stared down at the table.
I'm sorry, Aelin said,
even though Aerobin orchestrated it. I'm sorry.
You came for me,
Lysandra said so quietly that it was hardly a breath.
All of you. You came for me.
She had told Nezrin and Kaol in detail of her overnight stay in a hidden dungeon beneath the city streets. Already the rebels were combing the sewers for it. She remembered little of the rest, having been blindfolded and gagged. Wondering if they would put a wordstone ring on her finger had been the worst of it, she said. That dread would haunt her for a while.
You thought we wouldn't come for you? I've never had friends who cared what happened to me, other than Sam and Wesley. Most people would have let me be taken, dismissed me as just another whore.
I've been thinking about that.
Oh?
Aelin reached into her pocket and pushed a folded piece of paper across the table. It's for you. And her.
We don't need-
Lysandra's eyes fell upon the wax seal. A snake in midnight ink. Clarice's sigil.
What is this?
Open it. Glancing between her and the paper, Lysandra cracked the seal and read the text.
I, Clarice Duvency, hereby declare that any debts owed to me by-
The paper began shaking.
Any debts owed to me by Lysandra and Evangeline are now paid in full. At their earliest convenience, they may receive the mark of their freedom.
The paper fluttered to the table as Lysandra's hands slackened. She raised her head to look at Aelin.
Ugh,
Aelin said, even as her own eyes filled. I hate you for being so beautiful even when you cry.
Do you know how much money?
Did you think I'd leave you enslaved to her?
I don't know what to say to you. I don't know how to thank you.
You don't need to. Lysandra put her face in her hands and sobbed. I'm sorry if you wanted to do the proud and noble thing and stick it out for another decade, Aelin began. Lysandra only wept harder.
But you have to understand that there was no rutting way I was going to leave without-
Shut up, Aelin, Lysandra said through her hands.
Just shut up.
She lowered her hands, her face now puffy and splotchy. Aelin sighed. Oh, thank the gods. You can look hideous when you cry. Lysandra burst out laughing. Manon and Asterin stayed in the mountains all day and night after her second revealed her invisible wound. They caught mountain goats for themselves and their wyverns, and roasted them over a fire that night as they carefully considered what they might do. When Manon eventually dozed off, curled against Abraxos with a blanket of stars overhead. Her head felt clearer than it had in months, and yet something nagged at her, even in sleep. She knew what it was when she awoke, a loose thread in the loom of the three-faced goddess.
You ready?
Asterin said, mounting her pale blue wyvern and smiling. A real smile. Manon had never seen that smile. She wondered how many people had. Wondered if she herself had ever smiled that way. Manon gazed northward. There's something I need to do. When she explained it to her second, Asterin didn't hesitate to declare that she would go with her. So they stopped by Morath long enough to get supplies. They let Sorrel and Vesta know the bare details, and instructed them to tell the Duke she'd been called away. They were airborne within an hour, flying hard and fast above the clouds to keep hidden. Mile after mile they flew. Manon couldn't tell why that thread kept yanking, why it felt so urgent, but she pushed them hard, all the way to Rifthold. 4 days. Aelin had been in this freezing, festering dungeon for 4 days. It was so cold that she could hardly sleep, and the food they chucked in was barely edible. Fear kept her alert, prompting her to test the door, to watch the guards whenever they opened it, to study the halls behind them. She learned nothing useful. 4 days, and Manon had not come for her. None of the Blackbeaks had. She didn't know why she expected it. Manon had forced her to spy on that chamber, after all. She tried not to think about what might await her now,
tried, and failed. She wondered if anyone would even remember her name when she was dead, if it would ever be carved anywhere. She knew the answer, and knew there was no one coming for her.
Chapter 65. Rowan was more tired than he'd admit to Aelin or Adian, and in the flurry of planning, he'd hardly had a moment alone with the Queen. It had taken him 2 days of rest and sleeping like the dead before he was back on his feet, and able to go through his training exercises without being winded. After finishing his evening routine, he was so exhausted by the time he staggered into bed that he was asleep before Aelin had finished washing up. No, he hadn't given humans nearly enough credit all these years. It would be such a damn relief to have his magic back, if their plan worked. Considering the fact that they were using Hellfire, things could go very, very wrong. Kaol hadn't been able to meet with Ress or Brello yet, but tried every day to get messages to them. The real difficulty, it seemed, was that over half the rebels had fled, as more Vog soldiers poured in. 3 executions a day was the new rule. Sunrise, noon, and sunset. Former magic wielders, rebels, suspected rebel sympathizers. Kaol and Nezrin managed to save some, but not all. The cawing of crows could now be heard on every street. A male scent in the room snapped Rowan from sleep. He slid his knife out from under his pillow and sat up slowly. Aelin slumbered beside him, her breathing deep and even, yet again wearing one of his shirts. Some primal part of him snarled in satisfaction at the sight, at knowing she was covered in his scent. Rowan rolled to his feet, his steps silent as he scanned the room, knife at the ready. But the scent wasn't inside. It was drifting in from beyond. Rowan edged to the window and peered out. No one on the street below. No one on the neighboring rooftops. Which meant Lorcan had to be on the roof. His old commander was waiting, arms crossed over his broad chest. He surveyed Rowan with a frown, noting the bandages and his bare torso. "Should I thank you for putting on pants?" Lorcan said, his voice barely more than a midnight wind.
"I didn't want you to feel inadequate," Rowan replied, leaning against the roof door.
Lorcan huffed a laugh.
"Did your queen claw you up? Or are the wounds from one of those beasts she sent after me? I was wondering who would ultimately win, you or the word hounds."
A flash of teeth.
"I slaughtered them all." "Why'd you come here, Lorcan?" "You think I don't know that the heir of Mala Firebringer is planning something for the summer solstice in 2 days? Have you fools considered my offer?"
A carefully worded question, to bait him into revealing what Lorcan had only guessed at.
"Aside from drinking the first of the summer wine and being a pain in my ass, I don't think she's planning anything at all."
"So that's why the captain is trying to set up a meeting with guards at the palace?"
"How am I supposed to keep up with what he does? The boy used to serve the king."
"Assassins, whores, traitors. What fine company you keep these days, Rowan."
"Better than being a dog leashed by a psychotic master."
"Is that what you thought of us? All those years that we worked together? Killed men and bedded females together? I never heard you complain."
"I didn't realize there was anything to complain about. I was as blind as you."
"And then a fiery princess flounced into your life, and you decided to change for her, right?"
A cruel smile. "Did you tell her about Solamere?" "She knows everything."
"Does she now? I suppose her own history makes her even more understanding of the horrors you committed on our queen's behalf."
"Your queen's behalf. What is it exactly about Aelin that gets under your skin, Lorcan? Is it that she's not afraid of you? Or is it that I walked away from you for her?"
Lorcan snorted.
"Whatever you're planning, it won't work. You'll all die in the process."
That was highly likely, but Rowan said,
"I don't know what you're talking about. You owe me more than that horse shit." Careful, Lorcan, or you'll sound like you care about someone other than yourself.
As a discarded bastard child growing up on the back streets of Doranel, Lorcan had lost that ability centuries before Rowan had even been born. It never pitied him for it, though. Not when Lorcan had been blessed in every other regard by Hellas himself. Lorcan spat on the roof. I was going to offer to bring your body back to your beloved mountain, to be buried alongside Lyria once I finish with the keys. Now I'll just let you rot here, alongside your pretty little princess. He tried to ignore the blow, the thought of that grave atop his mountain.
Is that a threat?
Why would I bother? If you're truly planning something, I won't need to kill her. She can do that all on her own. Maybe the king will put her in one of those collars, just like his son. A chord of horror struck so deep in Rowan that his stomach turned.
Mind what you say, Lorcan.
I bet Maeve would offer good coin for her. And if she gets her hands on that word key, you can imagine just as well as I what sort of power Maeve would wield then.
Worse. So much worse than he could imagine if Maeve wanted Aelin not dead, but enslaved.
A weapon without limit in one hand, and the heir of Mala Firebringer in her other. There would be no stopping her. Lorcan read the hesitation, the doubt. Gold gleamed in his hand.
You know me, Prince. You know I'm the only one qualified to hunt down and destroy those keys. Let your queen take on the army gathering in the south. Leave this task to me.
The ring seemed to glow in the moonlight as Lorcan extended it.
Whatever she's planning, she'll need this, or else you can say goodbye.
Lorcan's eyes were chips of black ice.
We all know how well you handled saying it to Lyria.
Rowan leashed his rage.
Swear it.
Lorcan smiled, knowing he'd won.
Swear that this ring grants immunity to the Vogue, and I'll give it to you,
Rowan said, and he pulled the amulet of Orinth from his pocket. Lorcan's focus snapped to the amulet, to the otherworldly strangeness it radiated, and swore. A blade flashed, and then the scent of Lorcan's blood filled the air. He clenched his fist, lifting it.
I swear on my blood and honor that I have not deceived you in any of this. The ring's power is genuine.
Rowan watched the blood drip onto the roof. One drop, two, three. Lorcan might have been a prick, but Rowan had never seen him break an oath before. His word was his bond. It had always been the one currency he valued. They both moved at once, chucking the amulet and the ring into the space between them. Rowan caught the ring and swiftly pocketed it. But Lorcan just stared at the amulet in his hands, his eyes shadowed. Rowan avoided the urge to hold his breath and stayed silent. Lorcan slid the chain around his neck and tucked the amulet into his shirt.
You're all going to die, carrying out this plan, or in the war that follows.
You destroy those keys?
Rowan said.
And there might not be a war.
A fool's hope.
There will be a war. It's too late to stop it now. Too bad that ring won't keep any of you from being spiked on the castle walls.
The image flashed through his head. Made all the worse, perhaps, because of the times he'd seen it himself, done it himself.
What happened to you, Lorcan? What happened in your miserable existence to make you this way?
He'd never asked for the full story, had never cared to. It hadn't bothered him until now. Before, he would have stood beside Lorcan and taunted the poor fool who dared defy their queen.
You're a better male than this.
Am I? I still serve my queen, even if she cannot see it. Who was the one who abandoned her the first time a pretty human thing opened her legs?
That is enough.
But Lorcan was gone. Rowan waited a few minutes before going back downstairs, turning the ring over and over in his pocket. Aelin was awake in the bed when he entered, the windows shut and curtained, the hearth dark.
Well,
she said. the word barely audible above the rustling of the blankets as he climbed in beside her. His night-keen eyes allowed him to see the scarred palm she held out as he dropped the ring into it. She slid it onto her thumb, wriggled her fingers, and frowned when nothing particularly exciting happened. A laugh caught in his throat.
How mad is Lorcan going to be?
Aelin murmured as they lay down face to face.
When he eventually opens up that amulet,
finds the Vog Commander's ring inside, and realizes we gave him a fake. The demon ripped down the remaining barriers between their souls, as though they were paper, until only one remained, a tiny shell of self. He did not remember waking, or sleeping, or eating. Indeed, there were very few moments when he was even there, looking out through his eyes. Only when the demon prince fed on the prisoners in the dungeons, when he allowed him to feed, to drink alongside him, that was the only time he now surfaced. Whatever control he'd had that day.
What day?
He could not remember a time when the demon had not been there inside of him. And yet, Manon. A name.
Do not think of that one. Do not think of her.
The demon hated that name. Manon.
Enough. We do not speak of them, the descendants of our kings.
Speak of whom?
Good.
You're ready for tomorrow? Aelin said to Kaol, as they stood on the roof of her apartment, gazing toward the glass castle. In the setting sun, it was awash in gold and orange and ruby, as if it were already aflame. Kaol prayed it wouldn't come to that, but...
As ready as I can be.
He tried not to look too hesitant, too wary, when he'd arrived minutes ago to run through tomorrow's plan one last time. And Aelin had instead asked him to join her up here, alone. She was wearing a loose white shirt tucked into tight brown pants, her hair unbound, and hadn't even bothered to put on shoes. He wondered what her people would think of a barefoot queen. Aelin braced her forearms on the roof rail, hooking one ankle over the other, as she said,
You know that I won't unnecessarily endanger any lives.
I know. I trust you.
She blinked, and shame washed through him at the shock on her face.
Do you regret, she said, sacrificing your freedom to get me to Wendlin?
No,
he said, surprising himself to find it true.
Regardless of what happened between us, I was a fool to serve the king. I like to think I would have left someday.
He needed to say that to her, had needed to say it from the moment she'd returned.
With me,
she said, her voice hoarse.
You would have left with me when I was just Selena.
But you were never just Selena, and I think you knew that deep down, even before everything happened. I understand now.
She studied him with eyes that were far older than 19.
You're still the same person, Kaol. That you were before you broke the oath to your father.
He wasn't sure whether or not that was an insult. He supposed he deserved it, after all he'd said and done.
Maybe I don't want to be that person anymore,
he said. That person, that stupidly loyal, useless person, had lost everything. His friend, the woman he loved, his position, his honor. Lost everything with only himself to blame.
I'm sorry,
he said.
About Nehemia. About everything.
It wasn't enough. It never would be. But she gave him a grim smile, eyes darting to the faint scar on his cheek.
I'm sorry I mauled your face,
then tried to kill you. She turned to the glass castle again.
It's still hard for me to think about what happened this winter. But in the end, I'm grateful you sent me to Wendlin and made that bargain with your father.
She closed her eyes and took a shallow breath. When she opened her eyes, the setting sun filled them with liquid gold. Kaol braced himself.
It meant something to me, what you and I had. More than that, your friendship meant something to me. I never told you the truth about who I was because I couldn't face that truth. I'm sorry if what I said to you on the docks that day, that I'd pick you Made you think I'd come back, and it would all be fixed. Things changed. I changed. He'd waited for this conversation for weeks now. Months now. And he'd expected himself to yell, or pace, or just shut her out entirely. But there was nothing but calm in his veins. A steady, peaceful calm.
You deserve to be happy,
he said, and meant it. She deserved the joy he so often glimpsed on her face when Rowan was near. Deserved the wicked laughter she shared with Adian, the comfort and teasing with Lysandra. She deserved happiness, perhaps more than anyone. She flicked her gaze over his shoulder, to where Nezrin's slim silhouette filled the doorway onto the roof, where she'd been waiting for the past few minutes. So do you, Kaol.
You know she and I haven't.
I know. But you should. Falik, Nezrin is a good woman. You deserve each other.
This is assuming she has any interest in me.
A knowing gleam in those eyes. She does. Kaol again glanced toward Nezrin, who gazed at the river. He smiled a bit. But then Aelin said, I promise I'll make it quick and painless. For Dorian. His breathing locked up.
Thank you. But if I ask...
He couldn't say it. Then the blow is yours. Just say the word. She ran her fingers over the eye of Elena, its blue stone gleaming in the sunset. We do not look back, Kaol. It helps no one and nothing to look back. We can only go on. There she was, that queen looking out at him. A hint of the ruler she was becoming. And it knocked the breath out of him, because it made him feel so strangely young, when she now seemed so old.
What if we go on?
He said.
Only to more pain and despair. What if we go on only to find a horrible end waiting for us?
Aelin looked northward, as if she could see all the way to Terrasen. Then it is not the end.
Only 20 of them left. I hope to hell they're ready tomorrow,
Kaol said under his breath, as he and Nezrin left a covert gathering of rebels at a rundown inn beside the fishing docks. Even inside the inn, the cheap ale hadn't been able to cover the reek of fish coming from both the guts still splattered on the wooden planks outside, and the hands of the fishmongers who shared the tavern room.
Better than only two, and they will be, Nezrin said, her steps light on the dock as they strode down the riverfront.
Lanterns on the boats docked alongside the walkway bobbed and swayed with the current. From far across the aviary, the faint sound of music trickled from one of the pretty country estates on its banks. A party on the eve of the summer solstice. Once, a lifetime ago, he and Dorian had gone to those parties, dropping by several in one night. He'd never enjoyed it, had only gone to keep Dorian safe, but he should have enjoyed it. He should have savored every second with his friend. He'd never realized how precious the calm moments were. But he wouldn't think about it, what he had to do tomorrow, what he'd say goodbye to. They walked in silence until Nezrin turned down a side street and walked up to a small stone temple wedged between two market warehouses. The gray rock was worn, the columns flanking the entrance embedded with various shells and bits of coral. Golden light spilled from the inside, revealing a round, open space with a simple fountain in its center. Nezrin climbed the few steps and dropped a coin into the sealed bin beside a pillar.
Come with me.
And maybe it was because he didn't want to sit alone in his apartment and brood over what was to come tomorrow. Maybe it was because visiting a temple, however useless, couldn't hurt. Kaol followed her inside. At this hour, the sea god's temple was empty. A small door at the back of the space was padlocked. Even the priest and priestess had gone to sleep for a few hours, before they had to awake ahead of the dawn, when the sailors and fishermen would make their offerings, reflect, or ask for blessings before setting off with the sun. Two lanterns, crafted from sun-bleached coral, hung from the domed ceiling, setting the mother-of-pearl tiles above them glimmering like the surface of the sea. Nezrin took a seat on one of four benches set along the curved walls, a bench for each direction a sailor might journey in. She picked south.
For the southern continent,
Kaol asked, sitting beside her on the smooth wood. Nezrin stared at the little fountain, the bubbling water the only sound.
We went to the southern continent a few times, twice when I was a child, to visit family, once to bury my mother. Her whole life I'd always catch her gazing south, as if she could see it.
I thought only your father came from there.
Yes, but she fell in love with it, and said it felt more like home than this place. My father never agreed with her, no matter how many times she begged him to move back.
Do you wish he had?
Her night-dark eyes shifted toward him.
I've never felt as though I had a home, either here or in the Mylas Aegea.
The God City,
he said, recalling the history and geography lessons that had been drilled into him. It was more frequently called by its other name, Antica, and was the largest city on the southern continent, home to a mighty empire in its own right, which claimed it had been built by the hands of gods. Also home to the Torre Chesme, the best mortal healers in the world. He'd never known Nezrin's family had been from the city itself.
Where do you think home might be?
He asked.
Nezrin braced her forearms on her knees.
I don't know, she admitted, twisting her head to look back at him. Any ideas?
You deserve to be happy, Aelin had said earlier that night. An apology, and a shove out the door, he supposed. He didn't want to waste the calm moments. So he reached for her hand, sliding closer as he interlaced their fingers. Nezrin stared at their hands for a heartbeat, then sat up.
Maybe once all this, once everything is over,
Kaol said hoarsely,
we could figure that out. Together.
Promise me,
she breathed, her mouth shaking. Indeed, that was silver lining her eyes, which she closed long enough to master herself. Nezrin Falik moved to tears.
Promise me,
she repeated, looking at their hands again,
that you will walk out of that castle tomorrow.
He'd wondered why she'd brought him in here, the sea god and the god of oaths. He squeezed her hand. She squeezed back. Gold light rippled on the surface of the sea god's fountain, and Kaol offered up a silent prayer.
I promise.
Rowan was in bed, casually testing his left shoulder with careful rotations. He'd pushed himself hard today while training, and soreness now throbbed in his muscles. Aelin was in her closet, preparing for bed. Quiet, as she'd been all day and evening. With two urns of hellfire now hidden a block away in an abandoned building, everyone should be tiptoeing around. One small accident and they would be incinerated so thoroughly that no ash would remain. But he'd made sure that wasn't her concern. Tomorrow, he and Adian would be the ones bearing the urns through the network of sewer tunnels and into the castle itself. Aelin had tracked the wordhounds to their secret entrance, the one that fed right to the clock tower. And now that she'd tricked Lorkin into killing them all for her, the way would be clear for him and Adian to plant the vats, set the fuses, and use their fey swiftness to get the hell out before the tower exploded. Then Aelin and the captain would play their part, the most dangerous of all, especially since they hadn't been able to get a message into the palace beforehand. And Rowan wouldn't be there to help her. He'd gone over the plan with her again and again. Things could go wrong so easily. And yet she hadn't looked nervous as she downed her dinner. But he knew her well enough to see the storm brewing beneath the surface, to feel its charge even from across the room. Rowan rotated his shoulder again, and soft footsteps sounded on the carpet.
I've been thinking,
Rowan started, and then forgot everything he was going to say as he bolted upright in bed. Aelin leaned against the closet doorway, clad in a nightgown of gold. Metallic gold, as he'd requested. It could have been painted on her for how closely it hugged every curve and dip, for all that it concealed. A living flame, that's what she looked like. He didn't know where to look, where he wanted to touch first.
If I recall correctly, she drawled, someone said to remind him to prove me wrong about my hesitations.
I think I had two options. Words or tongue and teeth.
A low growl rumbled in his chest. Did I now?
She took a step, and the full scent of her desire hit him like a brick to the face. He was going to rip that nightgown to shreds. He didn't care how spectacular it looked. He wanted bare skin.
Don't even think about it, she said, taking another step, as fluid as molten metal. Lysandra lent it to me.
His heartbeat thundered in his ears. If he moved an inch, he'd be on her, would take her in his arms and begin learning just what made the air of fire really burn. But he got out of bed, risking all of one step, drinking down the sight of the long, bare legs, the curve of her breasts, peaked despite the balmy summer night, the bob of her throat as she swallowed.
You said that things had changed, that we'd deal with it.
Her turn to dare another step. Another.
I'm not going to ask you for anything you're not ready or willing to give.
He froze as she stopped directly before him, tipping back her head to study his face, as her scent twined around him, awakening him.
Gods, that scent.
From the moment he'd bitten her neck in Wendlin, the moment he'd tasted her blood and loathed the beckoning wildfire that crackled in it, he'd been unable to get it out of his system.
Aelin, you deserve better than this, than me.
He'd wanted to say it for a while now.
She didn't so much as flinch.
Don't tell me what I do and don't deserve. Don't tell me about tomorrow, or the future, or any of it.
He took her hand. Her fingers were cold, shaking slightly.
What do you want me to tell you, Fireheart?
She studied their joined hands, and the gold ring encircling her thumb. He squeezed her fingers gently. When she lifted her head, her eyes were blazing bright.
Tell me that we'll get through tomorrow.
Tell me that we'll survive the war. Tell me. She swallowed hard. Tell me that even if I lead us all to ruin, we'll burn in hell together.
We're not going to hell, Aelin, he said. But wherever we go, we'll go together.
Her mouth wobbled slightly, and she released his hand only to brace her own on his chest.
Just once, she said. I want to kiss you just once.
Every thought went out of his head.
That sounds like you're expecting not to do it again.
The flicker of fear in her eyes told him enough. Told him that her behavior at dinner might have been mostly bravado to keep Adian calm.
I know the odds.
You and I have always relished damning the odds.
She tried and failed to smile. He leaned in, sliding a hand around her waist. The lace and silk smooth against his fingers. Her body warm and firm beneath it, and whispered in her ear.
Even when we're apart tomorrow, I'll be with you every step of the way, and every step after, wherever that may be.
She sucked in a shuddering breath, and he pulled back far enough for them to share breath. Her fingers shook as she brushed them against his mouth, and his control nearly shredded apart right there.
What are you waiting for?
He said, the words near guttural. Bastard, she murmured, and kissed him. Her mouth was soft and warm, and he bit back a groan. His body went still. His entire world went still at that whisper of a kiss, the answer to a question he'd asked for centuries. He realized he was staring only when she withdrew slightly. His fingers tightened at her waist.
Again,
he breathed. She slid out of his grip.
If we live through tomorrow, you'll get the rest.
He didn't know whether to laugh or roar.
Are you trying to bribe me into surviving?
She smiled at last, and damn if it didn't kill him, the quiet joy in her face. They had walked out of darkness and pain and despair together. They were still walking out of it. So that smile, it struck him stupid every time he saw it, and realized it was for him. Rowan remained rooted to the center of the room as Aelin climbed into bed and blew out the candles. He stared at her through the darkness. She said softly,
You make me want to live, Rowan. Not survive. Not exist. Live. He didn't have the words. Not when what she said hit him harder and deeper than any kiss. So he climbed into bed and held her tightly all through the night. Chapter 66. Aelin ventured out at dawn to snag breakfast from the vendors in the main market of the slums. The sun was already warming the quiet streets, and her cloak and hood quickly turned stuffy. At least it was a clear day. At least that bit had gone right, despite the crows cackling over the corpses in the execution squares. The sword at her side was a dead weight. Too soon she'd be swinging it. Too soon she'd face the man who had murdered her family and enslaved her kingdom. Too soon she would put an end to her friend's life. Maybe she wouldn't even walk out of the castle alive. Or perhaps she would walk out wearing a black collar of her own, if Lorcan had betrayed them. Everything was prepared. Every possible pitfall had been considered. Every weapon had been sharpened. Lysandra had taken Evangeline to have their tattoos formally stamped off yesterday, and then collected her belongings from the brothel. Now they were staying in an upscale inn across the city, paid for with the small savings Lysandra had squirreled away for years. The courtesan had offered her help again and again, but Aelin ordered her to get the hell out of the city and to head for Nezrin's country home. The courtesan warned her to be careful, kissed both her cheeks, and set off with her ward. Both of them beaming, both of them free. Hopefully they were on their way out now. Aelin bought a bag of pastries and some meat pies, barely listening to the market around her, already abuzz with early revelers out to celebrate the solstice. They were more subdued than most years, but given the executions, she didn't blame them.
Miss?
She stiffened, going for her sword, and realized that the pie vendor was still waiting for his coppers. He flinched and retreated a few steps behind his wooden cart.
Sorry,
she mumbled, dumping the coins into his outstretched hand. The man gave her a wary smile.
Everyone's a bit jumpy this morning, it seems.
She half turned.
More executions?
The vendor jerked his round chin toward a street leading off the market.
You didn't see the message on your way in?
She gave a sharp shake of the head. He pointed. She thought the crowd by the corner was watching some street performer.
Oddest thing. No one can make any sense of it. They say it's written in what looks like blood, but it's darker.
Aelin was already heading toward the street the man had indicated, following the throng of people pressing to see it. She trailed the crowd, weaving around curious revelers and vendors and common market guards, until they all flowed around a corner into a brightly lit dead-end alley. The crowd had gathered at the pale stone wall at its end, murmuring and milling about.
What does it mean?
Who wrote it?
Sounds like bad news, especially on the solstice.
There are more, all saying the same thing, right near every major market in the city.
Aelin pushed through the crowd, an eye on her weapons and purse lest a pickpocket get any bad ideas. And then, the message had been written in giant black letters, the reek coming off them sure enough that of Volg blood, as if someone with very, very sharp nails had ripped open one of the guards and used him as a paint bucket. Aelin turned on her heel and ran. She hurtled through the bustling city streets and the slums, alley after alley, until she reached Kaol's decrepit house and flung open the door, shouting for him. The message on the wall had only been one sentence. Payment for a life debt. One sentence, just for Aelin Galathinius. One sentence that changed everything. Witch killer. The human is still inside him.
Chapter 67.
Aelin and Kaol helped Rowan and Adian carry the two urns of hellfire into the sewers, all of them barely breathing, none of them talking. Now they stood in the cool, reeking dark, not daring a flame with the two vats sitting next to them on the stone walkway. Adian and Rowan, with their fey eyesight, wouldn't need a torch anyway. Rowan shook Kaol's hand, wishing him luck,
When the Fey Prince turned to Aelin, she focused instead on a torn corner of his cloak, as if it had snagged on some long-ago obstacle and been ripped off. She kept staring at that ripped-off bit of cloak as she embraced him, quickly, tightly, breathing in his scent, perhaps for the last time. His hands lingered on her as if he'd hold her a moment longer, but she turned to Adian. Ash River eyes met her own, and she touched the face that was the other side of her fair coin.
"For Terrison," she said to him.
"For our family."
"For Marion."
"For us."
Slowly, Adian drew his blade and knelt, his head bowed as he lifted the sword of Orinth.
10 years of shadows, but no longer. Light up the darkness, Majesty.
She did not have room in her heart for tears, would not allow or yield to them. Aelin took her father's sword from him, its weight a steady, solid reassurance. Adian rose, returning to his place beside Rowan. She looked at them, at the three males who meant everything, more than everything. Then she smiled with every last shred of courage, of desperation, of hope for the glimmer of that glorious future.
Let's go rattle the stars.
Chapter 68. Lysandra's carriage meandered through the packed city streets. Every block took thrice as long as usual, thanks to the streaming crowds headed to the markets and squares to celebrate the solstice. None of them were aware of what was to occur, or who was making her way across the city. Lysandra's palms turned sweaty within her silk gloves. Evangeline, drowsy with the morning heat, dozed lightly, her head resting on Lysandra's shoulder. They should have left last night, but she'd had to say goodbye. Brightly dressed revelers pushed past the carriage, and the driver shouted to clear out of the street. Everyone ignored him. Gods, if Aelin wanted an audience, she'd picked the perfect day for it. Lysandra peered out the window as they halted in an intersection. The street offered a clear view of the glass palace, blinding in the mid-morning sun, its upper spires like lances piercing the cloudless sky.
"Are we there yet?"
Evangeline mumbled. Lysandra stroked her arm.
"A while yet, pet."
And she began praying, praying to Mala Firebringer, whose holiday had dawned so bright and clear, and to Temis, who never forgot the caged things of this world. But she was no longer in a cage. For Evangeline, she could stay in this carriage, and she could leave this city, even if it meant leaving her friends behind. Adian gritted his teeth against the weight he held so delicately between his hands. It was going to be a damn long trek to the castle, especially when they had to ease across waterways and over crumbling bits of stone that made even their fey balance unsteady. But this was the way the Wordhounds had come. Even if Aelin and Nezrin hadn't provided a detailed path, the lingering stench would have led the way.
"Careful,"
Rowan said over his shoulder, as he hoisted the vat he carried higher and edged around a loose bit of rock. Adian bit back his retort at the obvious order. But he couldn't blame the prince. One tumble, and they'd risk the various substances mixing inside. A few days ago, not trusting Shadow Market quality, Kaol and Adian had found an abandoned barn outside the city to test an urn barely a tenth the size of the ones they carried. It had worked too well. As they'd hurried back to Rifthold before curious eyes could see them, the smoke could be seen for miles. Adian shuddered to think about what a vat this size, let alone two of them, might do if they weren't careful. But by the time they rigged up the triggering mechanisms and ignited the wicks they would trail a long, long distance away, well, Adian just prayed he and Rowan were swift enough. They entered a sewer tunnel so dark that it took even his eyes a moment to adjust. Rowan just continued ahead. They were damn lucky that Lorcan had killed those wordhounds and cleared the way. Damn lucky that Aelin had been ruthless and clever enough to trick Lorcan into doing it for them. He didn't stop to consider what might happen if that ruthlessness and cleverness failed her today. They turned down another pathway, the reek now smothering, Rowan's sharp sniff was the only sign of his mutual disgust.
The gateway.
The iron gates were in shambles, but Adian could still make out the markings etched in them.
Word marks. Ancient, too.
Perhaps this had once been a path Gavin had used to visit the Sin Eater's temple unseen. The otherworldly stench of the creatures pushed and pulled at Adian's senses, and he paused, scanning the darkness of the looming tunnel. Here the water ended, past the gates. A broken, rocky path that looked more ancient than any they'd yet seen sloped up into the impenetrable gloom.
"Watch where you step,"
Rowan said, scanning the tunnel.
"It's all loose stone and debris."
"I can see just as well as you," Adian said, unable to stop the retort this time. He rotated his shoulder, the cuff of his tunic slipping up to reveal the word marks Aelin had instructed them to paint in their own blood, all over their torsos, arms, and legs.
"Let's go,"
was Rowan's only reply, as he hauled his vat along as if it weighed nothing. Adian debated snapping a response, but perhaps that was why the warrior prince kept giving him stupid warnings, to piss him off enough to distract him, and maybe Rowan himself, from what was happening above them, what they carried between them. The old ways, to look out for their queen and their kingdom, but also for each other.
Damn.
It was almost enough to make him want to embrace the bastard. So Adian followed Rowan through the iron gates and into the castle catacombs. Kaol's chains clanked, the manacles already rubbing his skin raw as Aelin tugged him down the crowded street, a dagger poised to sink into his side. One block remained until they reached the iron fence that surrounded the sloping hill on which the castle perched. Crowds streamed past, not noticing the chained man in their midst, or the black-cloaked woman who hauled him closer and closer to the glass castle.
"You remember the plan?"
Aelin murmured, keeping her head down and her dagger pressed against his side.
"Yes,"
he breathed. It was the only word he could manage. Dorian was still in there, still holding on. It changed everything, and nothing. The crowds quieted near the fence, as if wary of the black-uniformed guards that surely monitored the entrance, the first obstacle they'd encounter. Aelin stiffened almost imperceptibly, and paused so suddenly that Kaol almost slammed into her.
"Kaol?"
The crowd shifted, and he beheld the castle fence. There were corpses hanging from the towering wrought-iron bars. Corpses in red and gold uniforms.
"Kaol?"
He was already moving, and she swore and walked with him, pretending to lead him by the chains, keeping the dagger tight to his ribs. He didn't know how he hadn't heard the crows jabbering as they picked at the dead flesh tied along each iron post, with the crowd he hadn't thought to notice. Or maybe he'd just gotten used to the cawing in every corner of the city.
His men.
16 of them. His closest companions, his most loyal guards. The first one had the collar of his uniform unbuttoned, revealing a chest crisscrossed with welts and cuts and brands.
Ress. How long had they tortured him?
Tortured all the men, since Adian's rescue? He racked his mind to think of the last time they'd had contact. He'd assumed the difficulty was because they were lying low, not because
they were being.
Kaol noticed the man strung up beside Ress. Brello's eyes were gone, either from torture or the crows. His hands were swollen and twisted. Part of his ear was missing. Kaol had no sounds in his head, no feeling in his body. It was a message, but not to Aelin Galathinius or Adian Ashriver. His fault.
His.
He and Aelin didn't speak as they neared the iron gates, the death of those men lingering over them. Every step was an effort. Every step was too fast.
His fault. "I'm sorry,"
Aelin murmured, nudging him closer to the gates, where black-uniformed guards were indeed monitoring every face that passed on the street.
"I'm so sorry."
"The plan,"
he said, his voice shaking.
We change it. Now.
Kaol. He told her what he needed to do.
When he finished, she wiped away her tears as she gripped his hand and said,
I'll make it count.
The tears were gone by the time they broke from the crowd. Nothing between them and those familiar gates but open cobblestones. Home. This had once been his home. He did not recognize the guards standing watch at the gates he had once protected so proudly. The gates he had ridden through not even a year ago, with an assassin newly freed from Endovir, her chains tied to his saddle. Now she led him in chains through those gates, an assassin one last time. Her walk became a swagger, and she moved with fluid ease toward the guards who drew their swords, their black rings gobbling up the sunlight. Selena Sardothian halted a healthy distance away and lifted her chin. Tell His Majesty that his champion has returned, and she's brought him one hell of a prize. Chapter 69. Aelin's black cloak flowed behind her as she led the fallen captain of the guard through the shining halls of the palace. Hidden at her back was her father's sword, its pommel wrapped in black cloth. None of their 10-guard escort bothered to take her weapons. Why would they? When Selena Sardothian was weeks early for her expected return, and still loyal to King and Crown. The halls were so quiet. Even the Queen's court was sealed and silent. Rumor had it the Queen had been cloistered in the mountains since Adian's rescue, and had taken half her court with her. The rest had vanished as well, to escape either the rising summer heat or the horrors that had come to rule their kingdom. Kaol said nothing, though he put on a good show of looking furious, like a pursued man desperate to find a way back to freedom. No sign of the devastation that had been on his face upon finding his men hanging from the gates. He jerked against the chains, and she leaned in close.
I don't think so, Captain. She purred.
Kaol didn't deign a response. The guards glanced at her. Word marks written in Kaol's blood covered her beneath her clothes. Its human scent hopefully masking any hints of her heritage that the Volg might otherwise pick up. There were only two demons in this group. A small mercy. So they went up and up, into the glass castle itself. The halls seemed too bright to contain such evil. The few servants they passed averted their eyes and scurried along. Had everyone fled since Adian's rescue? It was an effort to not look too long at Kaol, as they neared the massive red and gold glass doors, already open to reveal the crimson marbled floor of the king's council room. Already open to reveal the king, seated on his glass throne, and Dorian standing beside him. Their faces. They were faces that tugged at him.
Human filth,
the demon hissed. The woman. He recognized that face as she yanked back her dark hood and knelt before the dais on which he stood.
Majesty, she said.
Her hair was shorter than he remembered.
No, he did not remember. He did not know her.
And the man in chains beside her, bloodied and filthy,
screaming, wind, and
enough,
the demon snapped. But their faces, he did not know those faces. He did not care. The king of Otterlin, the murderer of her family, the destroyer of her kingdom, lounged in his glass throne.
Isn't this an interesting turn of events, champion?
She smiled, hoping the cosmetics she'd dabbed around her eyes would mute the turquoise and gold of her irises, and that the drab shade of blonde she'd dyed her hair would disguise its near-identical hue with Adian's.
Do you want to hear an interesting story, Your Majesty?
Does it involve my enemies in Wendland being dead?
Oh, that, and much, much more.
Why has word not arrived, then?
The ring on his finger seemed to suck in the light, but she could spy no sign of the word keys. Couldn't feel them here, as she'd felt the presence of the one in the amulet. Kaol was pale, and kept glancing at the floor of the room.
This was where everything had happened. Where they'd murdered Sorsha. Where Dorian had been enslaved. Where once upon a time, she'd signed her soul away to the king under a fake name. A coward's name.
Don't blame me for the piss-poor messengers, she said. I sent word the day before I left.
She pulled out two objects from her cloak and looked over her shoulder at the guards, jerking her chin at Kaol.
Watch him.
She strode to the throne and extended her hand to the king. He reached forward. The reek of him. Vulg. Human. Iron. Blood. She dropped two rings into his palm. The clink of metal on metal was the only sound.
The seal rings of the king and crown prince of Wendlin. I'd have brought their heads, but immigration officials can get so pissy.
The king plucked up one of the rings, his face stony. Lysandra's jeweler had yet again done a stunning job of recreating the royal crest of Wendlin, and then wearing down the rings until they looked ancient, like heirlooms.
And where were you during Narok's attack on Wendlin?
Was I supposed to be anywhere but hunting my prey?
The king's black eyes bored into hers.
I killed them when I could, she went on,
crossing her arms, careful of the hidden blades in the suit.
Apologies for not making it the grand statement you wanted. Next time, perhaps.
Dorian hadn't moved a muscle, his features stone cold above the collar around his neck.
And how did you wind up with my captain of the guard in chains?
Kaol was only gazing at Dorian, and she didn't think his distraught, pleading face was an act.
He was waiting for me at the docks, like a good dog. When I saw that he was without his uniform, I got him to confess to everything. Every last little conspiratorial thing he's done.
The king eyed the captain.
Did he now?
Aelin avoided the urge to check the grandfather clock ticking in the far corner of the room. Or the position of the sun beyond the floor-to-ceiling window. Time. They needed to bide their time a bit longer. But so far, so good.
I do wonder, the king mused, leaning back on his throne. Who has been conspiring more? The captain? Or you, champion? Or should I call you Aelin?
Chapter 70. This place smelled like death, like hell, like the dark spaces between the stars. Centuries of training kept Rowan's steps light, kept him focused on the lethal weight he carried as he and the general crept through the dry, ancient passageway. The ascending stone path had been gouged by brutal claws, the space so dark that even Rowan's eyes were failing him. The general trailed close behind, making no sound save for the occasional pebbles skittering from beneath his boots. Aelin would be in the castle by now. The captain in tow was her ticket into the throne room. Only a few minutes more, if they'd calculated right. And then they could ignite their deadly burden and get the hell out. Minutes after, he'd be at her side, rife with magic that he'd used to choke the air clean out of the king's lungs. And then he'd enjoy watching as she burned him alive. Slowly. Though he knew his satisfaction would pale in comparison to what the general would feel. What every child of Terrasen would feel. They passed through a door of solid iron that had been peeled back, as if massive clawed hands had ripped it off its hinges. The walkway beyond was smooth stone. Adian sucked in a breath. At the same moment, the pounding struck Rowan's brain. Right between his eyes. Wordstone. Aelin had warned him of the tower, that the stone had given her a headache, but this. She had been in her human body then. It was unbearable, as if his very blood recoiled at the wrongness of the stone. Adian cursed, and Rowan echoed it. But there was a wide sliver in the stone wall ahead, an open air beyond it. Not daring to breathe too loudly, Rowan and Adian eased through the crack. A large round chamber greeted them, flanked by eight open iron doors, the bottom of the clock tower, if their calculations were correct. The darkness of the chamber was nearly impenetrable, but Rowan didn't dare light the torch he'd brought with them.
Adian sniffed, a wet sound. Wet, because... Blood dribbled down Rowan's lip and chin, a nosebleed.
Hurry,
he whispered, setting down his vat at the opposite end of the chamber.
Just a few more minutes.
Adian stationed his vat of hellfire across from Rowan's at the chamber entrance. Rowan knelt, his head pounding, worse and worse with each throb. He kept moving, shoving the pain down as he set the fuse wire and led it over to where Adian crouched. The dripping of their nosebleeds on the black stone floor was the only sound.
Faster,
Rowan ordered, and Adian snarled softly, no longer willing to be annoyed with warnings as a distraction. He didn't feel like telling the general he'd stopped doing it minutes ago. Rowan drew his sword, making for the doorway through which they'd entered. Adian backed toward him, unspooling the joined fuses as he went. They had to be far enough away before they could light it, or else they'd be turned to ash. He sent up a silent prayer to Mala that Aelin was biding her time, and that the king was too focused on the assassin and the captain to consider sending anyone below. Adian reached him, unrolling inch after inch of fuse, the line a white streak through the dark. Rowan's other nostril began bleeding.
Gods, the smell of this place.
The death and reek and misery of it. He could hardly think. It was like having his head in a vice. They retreated into the tunnel, that fuse their only hope and salvation. Something dripped onto his shoulder, an ear bleed. He wiped it away with his free hand. But it was not blood on his cloak. Rowan and Adian went rigid, as a low growling filled the passage. Something on the ceiling moved, then... seven somethings. Adian dropped the spool and drew his sword. A piece of fabric, gray, small, worn, dropped from the maw of the creature clinging to the stone ceiling. His cloak. The missing corner of his cloak. Lorcan had lied. He hadn't killed the remaining wordhounds. He'd just given them Rowan's scent. Aelin Ashriver Galathinius faced the King of Otterlin.
Selena, Lillian, Aelin, she drawled. I don't particularly care what you call me.
None of the guards behind them stirred. She could feel Kaol's eyes on her, feel the relentless attention of the Volg Prince inside Dorian.
Did you think,
the king said, grinning like a wolf, that I could not peer inside my son's mind and ask what he knows, what he saw the day of your cousin's rescue. She hadn't known, and she certainly hadn't planned on revealing herself this way.
I'm surprised it took you this long to notice who you'd let in by the front door. Honestly, I'm a little disappointed.
So your people might say of you, what was it like, princess, to climb into bed with my son, your mortal enemy?
Dorian didn't so much as blink.
Did you end it with him because of the guilt? Or because you'd gained a foothold in my castle and no longer needed him?
Is that fatherly concern I detect?
A low laugh.
Why doesn't the captain stop pretending that he's stuck in those manacles and come a bit closer?
Kaol stiffened, but Aelin gave him a subtle nod. The king didn't bother glancing at his guards as he said,
Get out.
As one, the guards left, sealing the door behind them. The heavy glass groaned shut, the floor shuddering. Kaol's shackles clattered to the ground, and he flexed his wrists.
Such traitorous filth, dwelling in my own home. And to think I once had you in chains, once had you so close to execution, and had no idea what prize I instead sentenced to Endovir. The Queen of Terrasen, slave, and my champion.
The king unfurled his fist to look at the two rings in his palm. He chucked them aside. They bounced on the red marble, pinging faintly.
Too bad you don't have your flames now, Aelin Galathinius.
Aelin tugged the cloth from the pommel of her father's blade and drew the sword of Orinth. Where are the word keys?
At least you're direct. But what shall you do to me, heir of Terrasen, if I do not tell you?
He gestured to Dorian, and the prince descended the steps of the dais, stopping at the bottom. Time. She needed time. The tower wasn't down yet.
Dorian?
Kael said softly. The prince didn't respond. The king chuckled.
No running today, captain.
Kael leveled his stare at the king and drew Damaris, Aelin's gift to him. The king tapped a finger on the arm of his throne.
What would the noble people of Terrasen say if they knew Aelin of the Wildfire had such a bloody history? If they knew that she had signed her services over to me? What hope would it give them to know that even their long-lost princess was corrupted?
You certainly like to hear yourself speak, don't you? The king's finger stilled on the throne.
I'll admit that I don't know how I didn't see it. You're the same spoiled child who strutted about her castle. And here I was thinking I'd helped you. I saw into your mind that day, Aelin Galathinius. You loved your home and your kingdom, but you had such a wish to be ordinary. Such a wish for freedom from your crown, even then. Have you changed your mind? I offered you freedom on a platter 10 years ago, and yet you wound up a slave anyway. Funny.
Time, time, time. Let him talk. You had the element of surprise then, Aelin said. But now we know what power you wield.
Do you? Do you understand the cost of the keys? What you must become to use one?
She tightened her grip on the Sword of Orinth.
Would you like to go head to head with me then, Aelin Galathinius? To see if the spells you learned, the books you stole from me, will hold out? Little tricks, princess, compared to the raw power of the keys.
Dorian,
Kael said again. The prince remained fixated on her, a hungry smile now on those sensuous lips.
Let me demonstrate, the king said.
Aelin braced herself, her gut clenching. He pointed at Dorian.
Kneel.
The prince dropped to his knees. She hid her wince at the impact of bone on marble. The king's brows knotted. A darkness began to build, cracking from the king like forks of lightning.
No,
Kael breathed, stepping forward. Aelin grabbed the captain by the arm before he could do something incredibly stupid. A tendril of night slammed into Dorian's back, and he arched, groaning.
I think there is more that you know, Aelin Galathinius,
the king said, that too familiar blackness growing.
Things that perhaps only the heir of Brannan Galathinius might have learned.
The third word key.
You wouldn't dare, Aelin said.
The prince's neck was taut as he panted, as the darkness whipped him. Once, twice, lashings. She knew that pain.
He's your son, your heir.
You forget, princess, the king said, that I have 2 sons.
Dorian screamed as another whip of darkness slashed his back. Black lightning flitted across his exposed teeth. She lunged and was thrown back by the very wards she'd drawn on her body. An invisible wall of that black pain lay around Dorian now, and his screams became unending. Like a beast snapped from its leash, Kael flung himself against it, roaring Dorian's name, the blood crumbling from the cuff of his jacket with each attempt. Again, again, again. Dorian was sobbing, darkness pouring out of his mouth, shackling his hands, branding his back, his neck. Then it vanished. The prince sagged to the floor, chest heaving. Kael halted mid-strike, his breathing ragged, face drawn.
Rise,
the king said. Dorian got to his feet, his black collar gleaming as his chest heaved.
Delicious,
the thing inside the prince said. Bile burned Aelin's throat.
Please,
Kael said hoarsely to the king, and her heart cracked at the word. at the agony and desperation.
Free him. Name your price. I'll give you anything.
Would you hand over your former lover, Captain? I see no use in losing a weapon if I don't gain one in return.
The king waved a hand toward her.
You destroyed my general and three of my princes. I can think of a few other Vog who are aching to get their claws into you for that, who would very much enjoy the chance to slip into your body. It's only fair.
Aelin dared a glance toward the window. The sun climbed higher.
You came into my family's home and murdered them in their sleep, Aelin said.
The grandfather clock began chiming 12. A heartbeat later, the miserable off-kilter clanging of the clock tower sounded.
It's only fair, she said to the king, as she backed a step toward the doors, that I destroy you in return.
She tugged the eye of Elena from under her suit. The blue stone glowed like a small star. Not just a ward against evil, but a key in its own right that could be used to unlock Erewhon's tomb. The king's eyes went wide, and he rose from his throne.
You've just made the mistake of your life, girl.
He might have a point. The noontime bells were ringing, yet the clock tower still stood.
Chapter 71 Rowan swung his sword, and the wardhound fell back, howling as his blade pierced through stone and into the tender flesh beneath. But not enough to keep it down, to kill it. Another wardhound leaped. Where they lunged, Rowan struck. Side by side, he and Adian had been pushed against a wall, conceding foot after foot of the passage, driven farther and farther from the spool of fuse Adian had been forced to drop. A clanging, miserable noise rang out. In the span between clangs, Rowan slashed for two different wardhounds, blows that would have disemboweled most creatures.
The clock tower. Noon. The wardhounds were herding them back, dodging sure kill blows, keeping out of their reach. To keep them from getting to the fuse. Rowan swore, and launched into an assault that engaged three of them at once, Adian flanking him. The wardhounds held their line. Noon, he had promised Aelin. As the sun began to reach its apex on the solstice, they'd bring the tower crashing down. The final clang of the clock tower sounded. Noon had come and gone. And his Fireheart, his queen, was in that castle above them, left with only her mortal training and wits to keep her alive. Perhaps not for much longer. The thought was so abhorrent, so outrageous, that Rowan roared his fury, louder than the shrieks of the beasts. The bellow cost his brother. One creature shot past Rowan's guard, leaping, and Adian barked out a curse and staggered back. Rowan smelled Adian's blood before he saw it. It must have been a dinner bell to the wardhounds, that demi-fey blood. Four of them leaped for the general as one, their maws revealing flesh-shredding stone teeth. The three others whirled for Rowan, and there was nothing he could do to get to that fuse. To save the queen, who held his heart in her scarred hands. A few steps ahead of him, Kaol watched Aelin back toward the glass doors, just as they'd planned after seeing his men dead. The king's attention was fixed on the eye of Elena around her neck. She removed it, holding it in a steady hand.
Been looking for this, have you? Poor Erewhon, locked in his little tomb for so long.
It was an effort to hold his position as Aelin kept retreating.
Where did you find that?
The king seethed. Aelin reached Kaol, brushing against him. A comfort and a thank you and a goodbye as she continued past.
Turns out your ancestor didn't approve of your hobbies. We Galathinius women stick together, you know.
For the first time in his life, Kaol saw the king's face go slack. But then the man said,
And did that ancient fool tell you what will happen if you wield the other key you already possess?
She was so close to the doors.
Let the prince go, or I'll destroy this right here and Erewhon can stay locked up.
She slid the chain into her pocket.
Very well,
the king said. He looked at Dorian, who showed no sign of even remembering his own name, despite what the witch had written on the walls of their city.
Go, retrieve her.
Darkness surged from Dorian, leaking like blood in water, and Kaol's head gave a burst of pain as Aelin ran, exploding through the glass doors. Faster than he should be, Dorian raced after her, ice coating the floor, the room. The cold of it knocked the breath from him, but Dorian didn't glance once in his direction before he was gone. The king took a step down the dais, his breath clouding in front of him. Kaol lifted his sword, holding his position between the open doors and the conqueror of their continent. The king took another step.
More heroic antics. Don't you ever get bored of them, Captain?
Kaol did not yield.
You murdered my men, and Sorsha.
And a good many more.
Another step. The king stared over Kaol's shoulder to the hallway where Aelin and Dorian had vanished.
It ends now,
Kaol said. The Vogue princes had been lethal in Wendlin, but when inhabiting Dorian's body, with Dorian's magic. Aelin hurtled down the hallway, glass windows flanking her, marble beneath, nothing but open sky around her. And behind, charging after her like a black storm, was Dorian. Ice spread from him, hoarfrost splintering along the windows. The moment that ice hit her, Aelin knew she would not run another step. She'd memorized every hallway and stairwell thanks to Kaol's maps. She pushed herself harder, praying that Kaol bought her time as she neared a narrow flight of stairs, and hurled herself up, taking the steps by twos and threes. Ice cracked along the glass right behind her, and cold bit at her heels. Faster, faster. Around and around, up and up she flew. It was past noon. If something had gone wrong with Rowan and Adian. She hit the top of the stairs, and ice made the landing so slick that she skidded, going sideways, going down. She caught herself with a hand against the floor, her skin ripping open on the ice. She slammed into a glass wall and rebounded. Then she was running again, as the ice closed in around her. Higher. She had to get higher. And Kaol, facing the king. She didn't let herself think about that. Spears of ice shot out from the walls, narrowly missing her sides. Her breath was a flame in her throat.
I told you,
a cold male voice said from behind, not at all winded. Ice spiderwebbed across the windows on either side.
I told you that you would regret sparing me. That I would destroy everything you love.
She reached a glass-covered bridge that stretched between two of the highest spires. The floor was utterly transparent, so clear that she could see every inch of the plunge to the ground far, far below. Hoarfrost coated the windows, groaning. Glass exploded, and a cry shattered from her throat as it sliced into her back. Aelin veered to the side for the now broken window, its too small iron frame, and the drop beyond. She flung herself through it. Chapter 72. Bright open air, the wind roaring in her ears. Then, Aelin landed on the open glass bridge a level below, her knees popping as she absorbed the impact and rolled. Her body shrieked in agony at the slices in her arms and back, where bits of glass stuck clean through her suit. But she was already sprinting for the tower door at the other end of the bridge. She looked in time to see Dorian hurtle right through the space she'd cleared, his eyes fixed on her. Aelin flung open the door as the boom of Dorian hitting the bridge sounded. She slammed the door behind her, but even that couldn't seal out the growing cold. Just a little farther. Aelin raced up the spiraling tower stairs, half sobbing through her gritted teeth. Rowan, Adian, Kaol. Kaol. The door shattered off its hinges at the base of the spire, and cold exploded through,
stealing her breath. But Aelin had reached the top of the tower. Beyond it, another glass footbridge, thin and bare, stretched far across to one of the other spires. It was still shaded as the sun crept across the other side of the building, the uppermost turrets of the glass castle surrounding and smothering her, like a cage of darkness. Aelin had gotten out, and taken Dorian with her. Kaol had bought her that time, in one final attempt to save his friend and his king. When she had burst into his house this morning, sobbing and laughing, she'd explained what the wing leader had written, the payment the witch had given in exchange for saving her life. Dorian was still in there, still fighting. She had planned to take them both on at once, the king and the prince, and he had agreed to help her, to try to talk Dorian back into humanity, to try to convince the prince to fight. Until that moment, he'd seen his men hanging from the gates. Now he had no interest in talking. If Aelin were to stand a chance, any chance, of freeing Dorian from that collar, she needed the king out of the picture, even if it cost her the vengeance for her family and kingdom. Kaol was glad to settle that score on her behalf, and on the behalf of many more. The king looked at Kaol's sword, then at his face, and laughed.
You'll kill me, Captain. Such dramatics.
They'd gotten away. Aelin had gotten Dorian out, her bluff so flawless even Kaol had believed the eye in her hands was the real thing, with the way she'd angled it into the sun so the blue stone glowed. He had no idea where she'd put the real one, if she was even wearing it. All of it, all that they had done, and lost, and fought for, all of it for this moment. The king kept approaching, and Kaol held his sword before him, not yielding one step. For Ress, for Brullo, for Sorsha, for Dorian, for Aelin and Adian and their family, for the thousands massacred in those labor camps, and for Nezrin, who he'd lied to, who would wait for a return that wouldn't come, for the time they wouldn't have together. He had no regrets, but that one. A wave of black slammed into him, and Kaol staggered back a step, the marks of protection tingling on his skin.
You lost,
Kaol panted. The blood was flaking away beneath his clothes, itching. Another wave of black, identical to the one that had struck Dorian, which Dorian hadn't been able to stand against. Kaol felt it that time, the throb of unending agony, the whisper of pain to come. The king approached. Kaol lifted his sword higher.
Your wards are failing, boy.
Kaol smiled, tasting blood in his mouth.
Good thing steel lasts longer.
The sun through the windows warmed Kaol's back, as if in an embrace, as if in comfort, as if to tell him it was time.
I'll make it count,
Aelin had promised him. He had bought her time. A wave of black reared up behind the king, sucking the light out of the room. Kaol spread his arms wide as the darkness hit him, shattered him, obliterated him until there was nothing but light, burning blue light, warm and welcoming. Aelin and Dorian had gotten away. It was enough. When the pain came, he was not afraid. Chapter 73. It was going to kill her. He wanted it to. Her face. That face. He neared the woman, step by step across the narrow shaded bridge, the turrets high above them gleaming with blinding light. Blood covered her arms, and she panted as she backed away from him, her hands out before her, a gold ring shining on her finger. He could smell her now, the immortal mighty blood in her veins.
Dorian,
she said. He did not know that name. And he was going to kill her. Chapter 74. Time. She needed to buy more time, or steal it, while the bridge still lay in shadow, while the sun slowly, slowly moved.
Dorian,
Aelin pleaded again.
I'm going to rip you apart from the inside out, the demon said.
Ice spread across the bridge. The glass in her back shifted and ripped into her with each step she retreated toward the tower door. Still, the clock tower had not come down. But the king had not yet arrived.
Your father is currently in his council room, she said,
fighting the pain splintering through her.
He is in there with Kaol, with your friend, and your father has likely already killed him.
Good.
Kaol,
Aelin said, her voice breaking. Her foot slid against a patch of ice, and the world tilted as she steadied her balance. The drop to the ground hundreds of feet below hit her in the gut. But she kept her eyes on the prince, even as agony rippled down her body again.
Kaol, you sacrificed yourself. You let them put that collar on you so he could get out.
I'm going to let him put a collar on you, and then we can play.
She hit the tower door, fumbling for the latch. But it was iced over.
She clawed at the ice, glancing between the prince and the sun that had begun to peek around the corner of the tower. Dorian was 10 steps away. She whirled back around.
Sorsha! Her name was Sorsha, and she loved you. You loved her, and they took her away from you.
5 steps. There was nothing human in that face. No flicker of memory in those sapphire eyes. Aelin began weeping, even as blood leaked down her nose from his nearness.
I came back for you, just like I promised.
A dagger of ice appeared in his hand, its lethal tip glinting like a star in the sunlight.
I don't care, Dorian said.
She shoved a hand between them as if she could push him away, grabbing one of his own hands tight. His skin was so cold, as he used the other to plunge the knife into her side. Rowan's blood sprayed from his mouth as the creature slammed into him, knocking him to the ground. 4 were dead, but 3 remained between him and the fuse. Adian bellowed in pain and fury, holding the line, keeping the other 3 at bay as Rowan drove his blade home. The creature flipped back, away, out of reach. The 3 beasts converged again, wild with the Fey blood now covering the passage. His blood. Adian's. The general's face was already pale from the loss of it. They couldn't stand this much longer. But he had to get that tower down. As though they were of one mind, one body, the 3 wordhounds lunged, driving him and Adian apart, one leaping for the general, 2 snapping for him. Rowan went down as stone jaws clamped onto his leg. Bones snapped, and black crushed in. He roared against the darkness that meant death. Rowan slammed his fighting knife into the creature's eye, driving up and deep, just as the second beast lunged for his outstretched arm. But something massive slammed into the creature, and it yelped as it was thrown against the wall. The dead one was hurled away a heartbeat later, and then... And then there was Lorcan, swords out and swinging, a battle cry on his lips as he tore into the remaining creatures. Rowan bellowed against the agony in his lower leg as he got to his feet, balancing his weight. Adian was already up, his face a bloody mess, but his eyes clear. One of the creatures lunged for Adian, and Rowan hurled his fighting knife, hurled it hard and true, right into its gaping mouth. The wordhound hit the ground not 6 inches from the general's feet. Lorcan was a whirlwind of steel, his fury unmatched. Rowan drew his other knife, readying to throw it. Just as Lorcan drove his sword clean down into the creature's skull. Silence. Utter silence in the bloodied tunnel. Adian scrambled, limping away and swaying, for the fuse 20 paces away. It was still attached to the spool.
Now,
Rowan barked. He didn't care if they didn't make it out, for all he knew. A phantom pain lanced through his ribs, brutally violent and nauseating. His knees buckled, not a pain from a wound of his, but another's,
No. No, 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 no!
He might have been screaming it, might have been roaring it, as he surged for the passage exit, as he felt that agony, that lick of cold. Things had gone very, very wrong. He made it another step before his leg gave out. And it was only that invisible bond, straining and fraying, that kept him conscious. A hard, blood-soaked body slammed into his, an arm wrapping around his waist, hauling him up. "Run, you stupid fool," Lorcan hissed, hauling him from the fuse. Adian was crouched over it, his bloody hands steady as he grasped the flint and struck. Once, twice, then a spark, and a flame that went roaring off into the darkness. They ran like hell.
"Faster," Lorcan said,
and Adian caught up to them, taking Rowan's other arm and adding his strength and speed. Down the passage, past the broken iron gates, into the sewers. There was not enough time and space between them and the tower. "And Aelin?" The bond stretched tighter, splintering.
"No.
Aelin." They heard it before they felt it. The utter lack of sound, like the world had paused, followed by a cracking boom.
"Move,"
Lorcan said, a barked order that had Rowan blindly obeying just as he had for centuries. Then the wind, the dry, burning wind that flayed his skin. Then a flash of blinding light, then heat. Such heat that Lorcan swore, shoving them into an alcove. The tunnels shook. The world shook. The ceilings came crashing down. When the dust and debris cleared, when Rowan's body was singing with pain and joy and power, the way into the castle was blocked. And behind them, stretching into the gloom of the sewers, were 100 Volg commanders and foot soldiers, armed and smiling.